Welcome aboard, you people. It is the Starship Rokon Show with Anna DeBlantis. Off for another day of broadcast insolence.
Not just any day. It's election day, Ro.
It is. And I just want to say that we will have an update on that in just a second.
Mm-hmm.
We also are going to be joined by Michael Avenatti.
He's in the news a bit lately with the R. Kelly situation and that tape that he has brought forward.
He has another one.
And another one on the way.
Yes.
He says.
So we'll talk to him about that. Mark McKinnon from the Circus will be here to talk about the what's happening on Capitol Hill. Michael Cohen, represented by our own Mike Monaco, mm-hmm. is on Capitol Hill today. You see Mike Monaco in all the videos that you're seeing of Michael Cohen walking into the testimony room. Uh-huh. And tomorrow, Mike's going to be on TV doing that thing where he whispers in his ear and he puts his hand over the microphone. And he goes, I'm sorry, Congressman, my client can't answer that question. You're going to see our own Mike Monaco doing that.
And I bet he'll look great. He always has the nicest suits. One thing we know about Mike Monaco, the pocket square. He somehow rocks the pocket square.
He has two scarves on at all times. He has an outer scarf and an inner scarf, and they were both flying down the hallway of the Capitol today as Michael Cohen was heading into one of the testimony rooms.
Don't let those get away. I bet they're worth something.
Oh, yeah. I know. It's true.
And great hair.
Yeah. Like
if you need illegal help, that's the guy you want next to you.
And he moves like an athlete. You know, he was like a college athlete and stuff like that. He's still a great tennis player.
Mm-hmm.
So he moves like sort of in this kind of an athletic cat kind of a way.
Yeah.
And you're looking at him, and you go, that's our guy. That guy sits in here. That guy's in here like three times. I'm with that guy at least an hour every day deciding what other crimes I shouldn't be committing. And there he is with Michael Cohen, who was the first guy I said was going to go to jail in this entire Trump thing in 2015.
You did. And there you go. He's also very calm in the storm, the Mike Monaco, which he'll need there. He actually needs coming in studio here, I would argue, but there in the Capitol as well. I think it'll come in handy.
Oh, wow. So, and we're told now, we don't get this from Mr. Monaco, we've gotten this from other reporting,
mm-hmm.
that there is a document that Michael Cohen is going to present to his inquisitors that proves a criminal act by the president.
Is it in relation to the Stormy Daniels and Karen McDougal?
We'll ask
payoffs?
Michael Avenatti about that.
All right, let's talk about that.
That's coming up in just a few minutes. Now, back to here in Chicago. It is Election Day.
Yeah.
And I have shocking turnout numbers.
It's not what you want to see, really, at all.
Super low turnout. And not only is it super low turnout, we also have a really interesting demographic bubble in the turnout.
Very different than in November.
Over half of the almost about 62% so far as of, I think these numbers ended at 11 o'clock this morning, but up to 11 o'clock this morning, 62% of the turnout was over the age of 55.
Yeah, it certainly doesn't seem evenly distributed. As we saw in November, remember, millennials rocked the vote in a lot of ways. There was a voter registration surge, and there was a lot of momentum toward getting out and voting. It doesn't appear that they're doing the same thing this time around. But the good news is there's still time to get out. The polls close at 7, so hearing that and knowing what, if you think about what a vote can mean in this election, with 14 candidates and this kind of low turnout, you can't even make the case for yourself that your vote doesn't matter.
About 140,000 candidates over the age of, voters over the age of 50 right now.
Yeah. Wait, what percentage, Ron?
Well, just going to give the raw numbers.
Okay.
About 140,000 people over the age of 50 have voted in Chicago as of 11 o'clock this morning.
Mm-hmm.
How many 18 to 24-year-olds voted, do you think?
Oh, gosh. That's got to be, what, 15,000?
Six.
Wow.
6,000.
Yeah.
So, Amara Enya might as well just take the rest of the night off. It would be my guess.
She has a lot of young support, but, yeah, a lot of young support.
Yeah. Who does this?
Chancellor Rapper voted, though. He's in that demo.
Yes. Well, that's one of these.
That was well documented.
Yes. Well, is he? Yeah, he's 18 to 20. Well, he's 25 to 34, I think.
Oh, is he 25 to 30?
Yeah. It's, they're 25 to 34 year olds. There have been 29,000 voters. So between from 18 to 34, I don't want to do too many numbers here. From 18 to 34, you had about 35,000 voters. And
seems
again,
very low.
You're at 140,000 voters over the age of 50.
Well, and just to think about it, it's about 1.5 million voters registered overall in the city. That is too few people determining who will be the next mayor of this race, right. Of the city. I mean, that's not good.
We were thinking maybe we'd get 600,000 voters, and we are not there yet.
Not on pace for that.
We are right now at 30. We're pacing to 30% total voter turnout, which will be the lowest number ever. And the lowest number ever was 33%. So it's like crazy.
But you think about how everyone's predicting with this many candidates and this few votes, you know, separating them likely, the front runners, that it'd be a long night and there'll be a lot of counting that's going on. You've talked about that on this show. You got to look at handfuls of voters could make the difference.
Yes, totally. Totally. I'm telling you, I'm sticking by my Willie Wilson makes the final too. I'm sticking by that.
You got Willie and Bill Daley.
Yeah, that's who I have. In a tight one.
Was he in the top four in that recent poll? The recent poll they had Lori Lightfoot.
I think it was number five.
Okay. All right.
But that recent poll had everybody at 17%, right? And him, there was like 17, 16,
three people
16,
at 16. 14, and then it went, you're right, they were separated 10, by very small percentages.
So with low turnout, that could be very consequential here.
Absolutely.
And when you have low turnout, who shows up? People in the church show up.
Right.
And the church buses are going to be pulling up to the polls and disgorging primarily older voters. And I happen to think that that's going to break well for Willie Wilson. We'll see. It's just a prediction. It's not an endorsement.
One. Didn't you also predict Trump was going to win the presidency?
I did, and no one believed me.
Like,
all right. Speaking of Donald Trump, Michael Avenatti is going to join us right after Kim tells us what's happening in the news.
It's election day, as we're talking about, but it appears it may not be a priority.
It looks like in Hawthorne Woods, Old McHenry Road, both eastbound and westbound between Midlothian and Fairfield, is blocked due to a stalled train. And then the Dan Ryan, we still have stop traffic inbound between Garfield and 43rd Street due to that overturned semi, which is now blocking the three left lanes in the locals. For personalized traffic on demand, get the Traffic Chicago app approved by the mortgage experts of Team Hochberg. Just search TRAFFIX Chicago. I'm Jen DeSalvone, WGN Traffic Central.
Oh, man. All right. He ruined my night last night, R. Kelly, by going to McDonald's, the McDonald's that I would go to.
And then went to that cigar bar in the Gold Coast area.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you're probably worried that wherever you were, he might be showing up at some point.
There was a helicopter hovering over my house all night last night because I don't live too far away from
that.
I need to live further away from that cigar bar, it turns out. All right, Michael Avenatti is joining us right now. He needs no introduction. And Michael Avenatti has now found his way into the R. Kelly situation here because he was in possession of one of the tapes that has now been made available to prosecutors. And there is another tape as well, Michael. And now, has that tape actually been presented? The second one that we talked about yesterday on television, is that one in the possession of law enforcement yet?
Yes, we've uncovered and recovered two tapes, both of which we have provided to law enforcement. Most recently, the second tape was provided yesterday morning, and then we're also aware of a third tape, which we're in the process of trying to locate and recover.
In the 2008 trial, it seemed that defense attorneys poked a lot of holes in the tape. Has it been altered? Has it been edited? Has anything been changed? Why do you think that won't be, and I imagine you do, won't be an issue here?
No, it's not going to be an issue. This tape is rock solid. There's no issues with this tape. It's clear as day. The audio is clear. The video is clear. There's no question that it's R. Kelly throughout the tape. The audio on the tape is also, as I said, clear. There's no question that he can be heard on the tape. There's references to the victim being 14 years of age on the tape that both she makes references to the fact. He states it as well. I mean, this is a bombshell piece of evidence. Both of these tapes are, frankly.
So these tapes, as they exist now, are on VHS, right? That's how you have attained them, and that's how you were able to hand them over?
Yeah, we don't duplicate evidence like this. We provide it in the exact same form in which we acquire it.
So we can assume that this is a first or second generation tape then, right? Because it's on the VHS format, which people don't really use anymore.
Correct.
Okay. And obviously, you are not going to talk about what your sources are for the tapes, but who are the, you know, who, to me, it's just an interesting question that this many years later, why now? Why are people finally, in possession of these tapes, because I would imagine that R. Kelly would be was the original owner of these tapes or maker of these tapes. So the question is, you know, how did they get out of his possession? Who had them? And why are they surfacing now? I guess that's the question I think you can answer. But if you'd like to answer how you got them, too, that's fine with me. I'd love to have you answer that. But.
Well, unfortunately, I'm not at liberty to get into the details of our 10-month investigation and how we uncovered these tapes and where we got them and who we got them from. And I mean, there's been a lot of work that's gone into this, quite honestly.
Will that ever come out, do you think?
There's no question it will. And there's been a lot of work, hundreds of hours of work has gone into this on a pro bono basis after we were initially contacted in April of last year. But I am highly confident. In fact, I know that there's going to be substantial evidence that will be presented and testimony relating to the rampant obstruction of justice that R. Kelly and his advisors and enablers engaged in connection with that 2008 trial. R. Kelly knows exactly what these tapes are and what they include. And the reason that we know that is because R. Kelly paid individuals a substantial sum of money to try to cover these tapes up so that they could be destroyed and kept out of the hands of prosecutors in connection with the 2008 trial. And that conduct, coupled with other conduct, is exactly how they were able to rig the results, namely the acquittal, in 2008.
Will there be cooperation from any of the young women who are on these tapes? Because that was the issue also in 2008. There was no cooperation from one of the subject on the tape. And now you wonder, is that going to be needed in order to make this convincing evidence?
So I represent two of the victims that are included in the indictment. There's going to absolutely be cooperation from those two victims. And I anticipate that there's going to be cooperation from other victims as well as other whistleblowers with knowledge of his conduct. And I think that as the walls begin to crumble around R. Kelly, and you're already starting to see that, it's going to be like rats leaving a ship. And many of these enablers and agents and the like that turned a blind eye to this conduct, all in the interest of money because they didn't want the gravy train of R. Kelly to end, they're going to be looking to save their own butt, and they're going to turn state's evidence against him. And this situation is going to get far, far more complicated and worse for R. Kelly. I anticipate additional charges being brought at the state level, not necessarily here in Illinois, although that's possible, but Georgia, and I anticipate charges at the federal level as well.
What do you make of those two women who are with him in court? One of them's father and another's sister has taken to social media and given interviews to say they, too, are currently being intimidated by R. Kelly, forced to go along with some act, and that they are not right, is what the sister said, that they're still somehow he's manipulating them, is the family's belief.
Well, I represent Angelo Cleary and his wife in connection with Osro Cleary, who is currently with R. Kelly and is one of those girls. And so I have detailed knowledge.
Are they underage? Is she underage right now?
She is not underage right now, although she was underage at the time that she initially met R. Kelly. And there's little question in my mind as to whether these women are brainwashed and under the undue influence of R. Kelly and people around him. I mean, I think at the end of the day, when this is blown wide open and we're on the cusp of it, if we're not already there, you're going to see that this is going to be a Stockholm Syndrome type situation that many of these young ladies, unfortunately, have had to endure.
And Michael Avenatti, you're already saying that you think he has violated his conditions of release. How has he done that?
Well, immediately upon being bailed out, he went to this McDonald's, which is a relatively well-known McDonald's to him because it happens to be one of the places that he regularly trolled for these young girls over the years. And he's not to have any contact with.
Uh-oh.
We lost Michael Avenatti.
Michael, are you there?
His phone died? There he is.
I'm here.
Okay.
I'm back.
All right, good.
I'm sorry.
That's right.
So he went to this McDonald's, which he regularly trolled at over the years. It's a pretty well-known McDonald's. Mm-hmm. I think it's a flagship here in Chicago. Right. And I believe that he had contact with individuals less than 18 years of age, and he's not to be having any contact with anyone less than 18 years of age, period.
Before we let you go, Michael, I want to ask you about one other an unrelated story here, but a story related to you, clearly. Right now, Vanity Fair is reporting that Michael Cohen is going to be presenting a document during his hearings here in Washington, to members of Congress, which will prove a crime committed by the President of the United States as it pertains to the Stormy Daniels payment. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I'm not surprised by it. I've been saying for since March 6th of last year when we filed the case that I believe that Michael Cohen and Donald Trump had engaged in a criminal act relating to the payment. And I believe that Michael Cohen was the biggest threat to the Trump presidency. And I said that vehemently time and time again, a lot of interviews across weeks and months. And a lot of people laughed at me at first, and then people stopped laughing. And it would not surprise me. I'm anxious to see what the document is.
Do you have any suspicion about what the document might be?
I do, but I don't want to comment on it. I don't think that'd be appropriate.
All right. Michael Avenatti, thank you, sir.
Thanks,
appreciate
Michael.
Your time.
Thank you.
All right. Michael Avenatti, who's now representing the families of R. Kelly's alleged victims.
Right.
All right.
The 47-year-old Romeoville woman who posted bail for R. Kelly, it's now revealed she doesn't only own restaurants, she owns a child care facility as well. So a lot of people saying that doesn't quite seem right.
Okay. You just couldn't write this stuff.
No. You couldn't.
Sometimes I wonder if I'm in some kind of a weird dream. When will I wake up?
For about a year and a half.
Yeah, but more than that. But 2.5 years.
2.5 years.
I kind of went into it in January of 2016 and haven't really come out of it. So it's like over 3 years now. All right. Can we take a quick break? We'll come back. Kim Gordon's got the WGN News. On the other side, we'll talk to Mark McKinnon from The Circus. Stay right here. Oh, boy. I don't know which came first, the television show The Circus or The Circus in Washington, but whatever it was.
It was a perfect
They are now
synergy.
Hand in hand. And Mark McKinnon joins us right now from, an undisclosed location as always, because you never know where he's on the road and what he's doing. Mm-hmm. But in Washington, Mark, our own Mike Monaco is representing Michael Cohen. He's walking around with his scarves flowing throughout the Capitol right now as he's taking him from room to room to meet with congressmen and senators. And tell them that he was once a liar, but he's reformed. He's no longer a liar, and this is what I want to tell you. Meanwhile, the White House is saying he's a liar, liar, liar. He was such a liar before they put him in jail. But I find that incredibly ironic, since, in fact, what the White House is saying was he was a liar when he said Donald Trump was a good guy.
Yeah, well, I think maybe both are true. By the way, I just left. This morning I was at the hearing when your lawyer pal brought him in, and it was the interesting thing about that was that the timing. I also was watching on my phone that the exact moment that Cohen walked into the hearing was the exact moment that Trump walked off the plane in Vietnam. So it was a really interesting kind of split screen moment, which is going to be a lot of this week. I mean, imagine all the split screen we're going to have tomorrow when he's testifying publicly, and then we have Trump doing his stuff in Vietnam. So it's going to be a really interesting week.
Oh, for sure. Hey, one of the things I think that is critical here is Michael Avenatti was just on the program with us, and we asked him because there's a document that Michael Cohen's going to be handing out here that he says, and his lawyers assert, I'm not going to put Monaco behind this one, but his lawyers assert, shows an act of criminality by the president in the run-up to the election. And Avenatti wouldn't comment on what he thought it was, but I said, are you familiar with what it might be? And he said, I have an idea. So that's pretty interesting.
What do you think? I mean, there's some people saying that it might have to do with Stormy Daniels and Kara McDougal and the payoff. There's some new document. Or maybe it's the Trump Tower deal where Cohen initially said all the talks broke down in January when he's now saying they continued till mid-2016.
Well, I'm aware that's been predicted. And Emily Jane Fox is also saying the same thing and is I'm sure you know, but maybe your audience doesn't. Emily Jane Fox is a writer for Vanity Fair who's the Michael Cohen whisperer. She's right. The one talking to Monaco. And
you had her on you guys had her on the circus in the last season.
Yeah, we did, and we're going to have her on a bunch this week. We're kind of traveling with her this week. She's kind of guest hosting with us so we can get all her insights. But if she predicted that as well, and the other tag on that is not only an act of, a criminal act, but a criminal act, the key sentence is while president. So it's something since, I guess, I don't know if it's president-elect or president-inaugurated, but it's something that happened. So the payments were before that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Unless there was some other kind of resolution of those payments. So I think it could be something else.
Right, or document about the encouraging him to lie about the payments or something. We'll have to see.
But that's the other thing, too, is the notion that he was talked to Cohen about his testimony, and in which case maybe there's a document about that, because that's also been speculated, and that would bring all those things together.
And let's talk about the wall here, because coming up a little bit later on the program, we're going to have Adam Kinzinger on with us, who made big national news over the last couple of weeks by being a sitting United States congressman, who's also a member of the Wisconsin Air National Guard, who was deployed to the wall, to the border, I should say, to do his mission. He's a pilot, so he flies a certain type of aircraft that's a reconnaissance aircraft that's looking for people on the ground that might be crossing illegally. What is interesting to me, and I think it is interesting to note about this, is that is a mission that Adam Kinzinger has been flying well before the Trump administration. That's mm-hmm. that's something that the Wisconsin Air Guard and a number of other air guards around the country fly as part of their recurrent training. So that's not, that in and of itself is not so unusual. What is unusual is that the Congress came out today in a press availability on Capitol Hill with Kevin McCarthy from the House, right, and said that he stands behind the president's emergency declaration here to build the wall, which is a bit of a change for Congressman Kinzinger, who has been seen very much as a moderate.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you asked me that, because we did our whole show last week on states of emergency, and we talked about not only the wall, but other things that people think are crises, like opioids, guns, and climate change. And it's one of the more substantive episodes we've done, and I really enjoyed it. And part of the reason I enjoyed it is I learned a bunch. And one of the things I learned about was the wall. And I learned about it from Dan Crenshaw, who's the Navy SEAL congressman down in Houston. And he was so compelling. And by the way, I'm kind of a, I am not a very conservative on the wall, because I'm a compassionate conservative, and I across the bridge to become a Republican when with George W. Bush talking very compassionately about welcoming arms for immigrants to this country, and
right.
So I've been very skeptical about Trump on the wall, but Crenshaw makes some really good points.
Can I play something?
I'll do it real quickly.
Let me play something and then have you react to it. This is from
the
circus
a
couple days ago.
Great.
The president has declared a national emergency. How do you feel about that?
Question is it a crisis? Is the president's rhetoric correct when we talk about the inflows, the drugs, the crime, and all that?
Yeah.
The answer is yes.
The answer is yes, it's a crisis?
Yes, it absolutely is a crisis.
Is it a crisis proportionate to declare a national emergency?
Well, it's debatable. It's debatable. That's a gray area. But is there a crisis on the border that is worthy of action? You betcha.
Okay. Mark McKinnon, were you surprised by his answer there?
Well, he thinks it's a crisis. He gets into some sort of constitutional stuff about the national emergency stuff in Article 1 and the duties of Congress. But he also has another point of view about the president. That's part of his job, is to execute the power he has of the laws that are on the books. And so he kind of argues that both ways. But he absolutely thinks it's a crisis. And he made a few points that, to me, were really compelling. And to be honest, kind of changed my mind about things. One, we all make the argument, or we keep coming back to this notion about there's fewer people. It's way down. It's down, it's lower than it's been in 10 years. And he says, yeah, part of the reason it's down is because it's working. The wall that we built is working. And by the way, and that funnels people into a certain area, which makes it easier for the border guards to apprehend. And by the way, makes it more expensive. And because it's more expensive, there's fewer people. That's because of the cartels and everybody that are and coyotes that are getting the people across the border. So that's one. Number two, He has this great sort of tale of two cities between Matamoros and Brownsville, where he says that in, I mix up the cities, but in one of those cities, they have the steel bollard fencing. And where they have the steel bollard fencing, they stop 96% of the people coming over. In the other place where they don't have it, they stop 4%. So, and then his other final point is, that's a compelling, I think, is to say, yeah, it's down, but it's still 400,000 people a year. And that's, you know, that's almost 1,000 people a day. I guess it is 1,000 people a day. So, I mean, those three things are pretty compelling. And he just says, listen, I don't, you know, we don't need a wall across the whole border of Texas, but in the places we have it, it works. And if you want to have an argument about legal immigration, I'm all for that. I live in a place where I think we need more legal migrants, and I'm glad to have that. But if we have laws that say these people shouldn't be coming across and they shouldn't be jumping in front of the line and others who are waiting, let's look at let's have a rational conversation about what's working. And
right.
I've been down there, and where we have the wall, it works.
This is where I think Donald Trump gets tripped up in his own by his own tactic, and he's a victim of his own personality in some respects. Here, there is a way to have a conversation. You did have it on the circus on Sunday. People can see that all this week on Showtime on Demand or however you want to find that. And Dan Crenshaw, who sprung to national prominence because they made fun of him for his eye patch on Saturday Night Live. People can't put him, you know, visualize mm-hmm. him. That's the guy. And then he came on Saturday Night Live on Weekend Update.
Yeah.
And he talks about it. This is the most interesting thing about this guy, who was a warrior who lost his eye in an IED attack, right? He's an American hero, this guy.
Yeah.
And he talks about, he's pretty conservative, but he talks about a way to communicate what these principles are and why they are important that the president is missing. Because the president does make all of this about a crisis and an emergency and about himself and his needs, not the needs of the people.
Well, I completely agree with that, and so does he. And he says in that interview that the president unnecessarily ratchets up his rhetoric. And part of the conversation I had with Crenshaw was, I said, I think it's really framed. The part of the problem, and Crenshaw says part of the reason that people hate this is because they just hate the president. They don't want to give him a win. But the other thing is that he's ratcheted it up so high so that we think that the contrary is actually true. And we had an interesting back and forth about this. I said, Dan, if you really want to argue about more wall, why don't you argue and say, actually, it's not a problem because there's no wall. They say it's actually working, and that's why we need more of it. It's because it's working.
Yeah.
You know, not that there's that this is a horrible situation and caravans stream across. We need more because we've proven that it works, and we should just do more of it.
Right. It pushes people,
which is contrary to what Donald Trump is doing.
And it pushes people toward the ports of entry if they want to try to get into the ports of entry. And then that's at least an organized system. Now, one of the problems is that the president says that 90% of the drugs coming across the Mexican border are coming across in the open, unwalled areas, which is not true. But he says it, and he's got to just stop saying things that are on their face not true, hoping that the American public is dumb enough just to buy anything he says because he said it.
Well, that's right, and that's why the Democrats, he's just giving the Democrats arguments and weapons to oppose the wall by laying out all these things that aren't true, because then the Democrats say, well, he's just lying about all this stuff, and therefore the argument just completely breaks down.
Yeah.
But when you have a rational conversation with somebody like Crenshaw, it's really a much different picture.
Who got Korea for you? I mean, who got to Vietnam for you guys?
Well, I was supposed to do it, and just for a whole bunch of reasons, mostly because of everything that's happened with Cohen this week, we just said we got to be here, so we're all here.
Okay, but there's going to be a ton from there that you guys will be able to incorporate into the show.
Yeah. It's just that's all just so scripted stuff, and you can't get outside the rope line anywhere there. So we'll get all the pool feed from that, because that's all there's going to be from there anyway. It's all so controlled. Nothing unique that we'd be able to get.
Did you see the correspondents got booted from the hotel when Kim Jong-un showed up?
Yeah, I did. So I saw that.
You guys are okay? You didn't get booted?
He doesn't have.
Oh, no, we didn't get booted. Right. No, we're here.
Yeah.
We just, yeah.
All right, so let me just go quickly, because I want, because I believe that the Ro Khan Show with Anna DeVlantis is the single most important radio talk show in America because it touches all these things every hour of every day.
Right.
But I want you and Mike Monaco, when you pass each other in the hallways now in Congress tomorrow, just kind of...
Oh, I will. I'll wave him down. We definitely have that in common there.
Yeah.
Best radio in America.
Yes, that's right. You're both regulars here, and that's very important. All right. Thank you, Mark.
Appreciate
it, man.
Always good to hear from you.
Thank you.
All right. Bye. All right, watch the Showtime. The best reason to have Showtime.
It is. It's a reason to have Showtime, for sure.
Right.
Michael Cohen, by the way, disbarred while giving his evidence on Trump to the Senate. Today, New York pulled his law license. So that's happening. Not that he really needs it for the next couple of years. I think he's tied up.
Trust me, he's going to be a jailhouse lawyer. He's one of those guys that everybody's going to be going to in the day room with their legal papers, and they're going to go, "Did you see what happened here? I was totally framed." Oh, he's going to be very popular.
He'll be one of those.
All right, let's now check in with Kim. What's happening at the top of the hour?
Chicago could break a voting record today, but it's something not to be proud of.
And in WGN traffic, an accident in Elgin, McLean Boulevard, just north of Erie Street, Des Plaines, Elmhurst, and Oakton. And in North Chicago, a crash, Route 137 eastbound, just east of Ohio Street. Traffic sponsored by Mako. You might not be able to get a new car with your tax refund, but you can get your car to feel like it's brand new. Come into Mako today and get your dream paint job during their tax season sales event. For personalized traffic on demand, get the Traffic Chicago app approved by the mortgage experts of Team Hochberg. Just search TRAFFIX Chicago. I'm Jen DeSalvo in WGN Traffic Central.
Coming up, chance to win a pair of tickets. See the Hawks take on the Buffalo Sabres Thursday, March 7th, courtesy of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. For all the right reasons, Four Seasons. Find them online at FourSeasonsHeatingCooling.com. All right.
Head out and vote.
Yes, because people have not. If you're in the city of Chicago and you can vote, and you haven't voted yet, go vote. Because the turnout is amongst the lowest in history in Chicago, and that could mean anything. That means that my write-in for myself could actually count for something, and if that does actually occur, then there's going to be trouble here, people.
That would be trouble.
I am not properly prepared to take the reins of this city. I would like to thank Kim for all of her work in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Big, busy day. Tom Skilling is joining us, courtesy of PermaSeal Basement Systems. And Tom, right before we get started with our conversation here,
yes,
I want to report something that is developing right now. Congressman Matt Gaetz, who is from Florida, is sort of a prominent national Republican now, just tweeted something out. Michael Cohen's about to appear in open session tomorrow, accompanied by our own Mike Monaco, lawyer for this show, as we keep interesting company around
company,
here.
Yes.
We certainly do.
Yes.
Michael Cohen is about to appear in front of this committee in which Congressman Gaetz sits. And listen to this tweet that Congressman Gaetz just put out. "Hey, Michael Cohen, do your wife and father-in-law know about your girlfriends? Maybe tonight would be a good time for that chat. I wonder if she'll remain faithful when you're in prison. She's about to learn a lot." That's a sitting United States congressman tweeting about a guy who's about to be a witness in a hearing in the United States Congress, about to drop a girlfriend rumor or whatever it is. Maybe they're going to ask about that tomorrow or whatever it happens to be, maybe in an effort to dirty him up and say, "Listen, this guy's a liar and he's a cheater and he's a this and he's that. Why would you listen to anything he has to say?" But that in advance of testimony could be considered witness tampering. I'd call Mike Monaco about this, but he's with Michael Cohen right now representing him.
And he's not allowed to talk to us.
Wow.
There are never any
lack of surprises in this whole saga, is there?
No.
Or are there?
No.
It's amazing.
He says he's challenging the veracity and character of the witness, not intimidating. But, boy, I don't know. There seems to be a better way to do that than...
Yeah. And why sit on that till this particular moment?
Right.
You know, if he
Good
had
point.
That information, wow, that's amazing. Wow. So is this getting, I imagine, a lot of coverage?
Yes, it's just kind of breaking now as coverage. I've reached out to Michael Cohen's attorneys to see if there's any comment. it's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, all right, fine. If they want to bring it up in testimony tomorrow, fine, that's fair game. But doing it in advance of the testimony?
Yeah.
Like, hey, you really want to go sit in there tomorrow? I don't think you do. That is, I don't understand how
we got here.
Well, no, where we're going. I don't understand where these folks like Matt Gaetz think they're going to take the Republican Party if this is the new political tactic.
Yeah.
This is not the American ideal. And I understand that Michael Cohen was not the American ideal either. But let's be honest here. Michael Cohen is only in this situation because he was the president's private lawyer. It's not like he was an enemy, a lifelong enemy of the president. He was his friend, right? That's how we got here. That's how we all got here. And now we're trying to, and I think that Congressman Gaetz and other Republicans should be interested in ensuring that the president of the United States wasn't involved in nefarious actions as much as any Democrat is. And I know they say, well, this is just purely political. It clearly is not purely political. There have been Republicans for years talking about this. The Republicans that ran against them, there are James Comey, you know, these guys, when they go in to do their jobs, they're not Republicans or Democrats. They are what they are, the FBI or, you know, special counsel or whatever they are. But these guys are all lifelong registered Republicans who now look at their own party and go, what is happening here? We do not want to become Ukrainian political system style thugs in the United States. We don't want it, even though that's who all these friends, the friends of all these guys were. We don't want that, whether it's Manafort or Cohen, because he comes from that too. He's got family actually involved in that, and he's Donald Trump, who was trying to build a tower. I don't know. Please make this stop.
It would be interesting to know where this little tidbit came from, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
You know, the veracity of it.
Does anybody doubt that Michael Cohen has girlfriends? Because I got to tell you right now, I don't doubt it. And if that were to come up in testimony tomorrow, I wouldn't even doubt that, because that's fair game if you're trying to impugn the credibility of the witness. But to bring it up before the testimony with the hope that maybe he'll step away from the testimony, that is classic tampering.
Seems pretty textbook.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And then would that technically be tampering?
A crime? Yes.
Would it?
Absolutely.
Interesting.
Absolutely. Now he's coming out and saying, listen, I'm just talking about the veracity of the witness. Mm-hmm. No, you're not in advance of the that's fine. You could do that in the courtroom. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of like the judge. Like, you know, you're going to court, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to court, and a juror goes on Twitter and says, you better not show up at court tomorrow because they're going to ask you about your girlfriends, right? I mean, you'd say, well, maybe that juror shouldn't be on the jury, right? It's almost as if these guys want to kill the Republican Party, not help it.
Well, there was a comment made a couple weeks ago about, check into his father. And that came from the
president, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, people haven't checked. His father, one of the reasons that Mike Monaco's involved, why Chicago lawyers are now involved in this, is because Mike Monaco's father, Michael Cohen's father-in-law, was involved in the taxicab business in New York and also a little bit here in Chicago. So there was some familiarity here with lawyers and regulators and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where that's where there's a nexus there. But
well, you couldn't write this stuff. You know, we always say it. You couldn't come up with this stuff. Well, except on a Netflix a comparable series or something along that
line. I like
it
better when it's not real life.
Yeah,
yeah, me too.
I agree.
More entertaining to watch, kind of a House of Cards kind of thing.
I know.
It's very fun to watch.
It is wild. It's wild because, if you stop and you look at this, you can't stop but be stunned by it. In the middle, and then every once in a while, we're going to have Adam Kinzinger on a little bit later on. We have him on all the time, but he's a Chicago area Republican congressman who's one of those guys who has traditionally stood up for, just about policy and for decorum and doing the right thing and for being not being a bully partisan, but making, you want to make your argument, you can make it certainly strongly, but you don't necessarily have to call your political enemy the enemy of the people or subhuman or any of the sorts of things that we're now seeing.
Is he still deployed down on the border?
No, he's back. He was in Washington today, as a matter of fact.
Gotcha.
But he's now he's siding with the president. That's why we're having him on. Mm-hmm. He's siding with the president on the need for a wall based on what he saw during his deployment. So we'll talk to him about that coming up after 5:30. But that's reasonable. And we had Mark McKinnon on from the Circus on Showtime, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. who this week had sat down with Dan Crenshaw, who's the congressman, first-term congressman, former U.S. Navy SEAL. And he was the guy that was on Saturday Night Live. He has the eye patch. And Pete Davidson made fun of him on one week.
Yes.
And then he came on Weekend Update the following week to accept his apology from Pete Davidson, which was great.
It was a beautiful moment of two sides coming together and just saying, hey.
And he's a brilliant guy who's all about trying to create coalition here as opposed to further division. And that's one of the arguments he's made. And he's also for the wall, and he's explaining why, because the wall works and for other reasons. And so when you have a calm conversation about it, minds can be changed. When you stand up and go, I want the wall because it's going to make me look bad if I don't get it, minds will not be changed. I'm sorry to drag you into all this.
Well, we kind of are dragging. You've got a lot of Republicans who are now saying, well, hey, we're not sure, even if there is a justification for this kind of thing, maybe we shouldn't be allowing the president, just this might not fall in that category of the crisis that he says. And,
right.
And he's losing a few Republicans on that front, not Adam Kinzinger, who doesn't look like he doesn't say the immigration part of this is the crisis, but he looks at the human trafficking and the drug passage as being more of the crisis that he wants to deal with. So sort of parsing some of what the president is saying.
It's a very dangerous game, though. They're throwing in with a guy who's their guy because he's a Republican president. So I get it. Republicans are rallying around. As Democrats are rallying around Democratic president. They're doing that. But they're throwing in with a guy who doesn't really care about their brand in the long run. And that's where I think a lot of Republicans are feeling very much like like they've got appendicitis and they're on an island, right? I mean, they're like, oh, what are we going to do? Because they're feeling that pain and they're like, how are we going to get out from under this on the other side? Mm-hmm. Because if the president changes the norms and the rules of engagement and even the laws, tries to get the laws challenged in by the Supreme Court and the Supreme Court sides with them, that changes the direction of the United States. And I think there's a lot of Republicans who are not completely comfortable with that. Because then if any president wants to declare anything a national emergency, there is no more constitutional presidency. It's now it's a kingdom.
Yeah. Well, and also, isn't that the role of Congress to appropriate the money for these kind of things?
Yes, would imagine.
They've definitively voted, at least in one house, that they don't want this. And
that's how Madison wrote it. I don't hate to get all like wearing a tri-cornered hat like they did, like they're founding father on us and walking around. I leave that to John Williams. But this is a significant issue that certainly the Tea Party folks were very animated about in the early 20-teens and they seem to have given up on that now because it's their guy doing it.
Yes. Well, I'll tell you, bro, it certainly makes for fascinating viewing. We all have a stake in this whole thing So you kind of wonder what the next twist and turn will be, but this is an interesting development you've highlighted. Very interesting.
Tom, what were those chimes we just heard? Is there some kind of major weather alert
I'm
we should know about?
Another one of my marketing calls, I guess, on the phone.
I thought that was weather machine-related chimes alerting us to something.
Muted this thing, and apparently, technology and me don't get along very well.
Tom, did you vote today?
I did. Yes.
Do you realize that you're one of only 15 people that voted, and I know three of them already?
I know.
Is that seriously? Is the turnout bad?
The turnout is incredibly low.
Wait, 15 people? So the 14 candidates and Tom Skilling, that's who's voted.
Yeah. Right. You're the deciding vote, Tom.
Right.
Turns out it's all on you.
That's right, Jen.
Isn't that
Thank
something?
You.
I mean, that's a right that we should really take advantage of. And if if all that's going on right now has communicated nothing to us, it's the importance of our votes.
Elected leadership,
point,
right?
Tom Skilling.
Yeah, these critical issues. Exactly. Yeah.
Here's the one thing we can all agree on is you should vote. And if you don't vote, you don't get to complain about it. And I vote, and I get to, and I'm on that list, where you find out your neighbors voted. You know, which is very creepy that they're doing this mailer in Chicago. This will probably happen in the next.
And say your neighbors have voted. Why haven't you? Or
yeah,
something
or
like that?
Or yeah. Your neighbors haven't voted, wow. And they tell you, you know, go tell your neighbors to vote. And it's like, what? What? Now, hey, now,
yeah,
they get all out.
Seems
my
a
business.
Little intrusive, doesn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah,
yeah.
But you did vote. Did
yes,
you vote
I did.
Today? Did you early vote?
No, I voted today.
You voted today.
I often have voted early, but then I've gotten stuck on these weekend lines, and I decided, you know, we've got a polling place right in my building, so there's absolutely nothing.
Oh, for God's sake.
Yeah.
That's handy.
It's an elevator. You take the elevator down. And did you note it? What time of day did you vote?
About 8:30 this morning.
Was there a line down there?
No. You know, there were people there, but no, it was... there were people voting, but it wasn't crowded. No.
Were there any young people voting? Because that's what we seem to not be having this
most
year.
Most of them were older. Now, that may be a part of that might
well,
be
that's,
my building.
We're seeing we're seeing that though because we actually have a demographic breakdown as of 11 o'clock this morning, and 62% were over the age of 50.
Wow!
And they said if you take all the people over 65 who voted, it exceeds all age groups below 44.
Yeah. Right. Yeah,
it's heavily weighted.
Heavily weighted
older,
toward older, yeah.
Older
and there are some mechanics, reasons for that. One, young people go to school, they work, you know, and the older folks who are retired have more time to do it. I'm not excusing
no
this.
No question about it, yeah.
And not only that, you can vote early. But I, you know what, they ought to do this on the weekend or something like that.
And maybe not in February, too, would be my other
sort of
suggestion.
Yeah.
On that.
Hey.
I know, right, you can't control it so
wait,
much, right?
Then when people are going to show up.
We don't
what's
want
wrong
that.
With you?
Right.
You got to think like a Chicago politician.
Besides, it's good to have voting in February because it takes Roe's mind off the weather that he's looking
well,
at
that's
for
true.
A few seconds.
Hey. Yes, go ahead.
Well, you know, isn't it amazing how cold we are here? I just got word they got a 70 over in the UK. Florida's had record high temperatures. I mean, not just for a date, but all time in the last couple of days.
It does seem like Chicago's taking it on the chin here this winter.
You know what's interesting, though? An interesting point was made by a researcher out in California. Everybody said, boy, this is really anomalous. He said, what's anomalous is the fact they haven't gotten snow like they've had out west more often. We used to get it more frequently than we do now. And, you know, I was looking at the year-long temperatures at Seattle, where there's been much made of the snow they've had, Los Angeles, Las Vegas, Phoenix, Salt Lake City, all those western Portland, Oregon. Every one of them has, if you look at the year-long temperatures, has been way above normal. So this is just an interruption in what has been a very warm period. Right. So I think that's kind of interesting because it assures us we're not going off the rails here.
I'm sick of it. I want to get
it. It is true, Ro. I think there's a degree of cabin fever I haven't seen for several years.
Yeah.
And it may be the fact we were, again, came into this so jarringly.
Mm-hmm. So you know, cold over the next number of days.
Yeah, it's going to be cold. But you know what? There are some signs that we got a pretty good slug of cold air coming down later this weekend and into next week. But there are signs that maybe this pattern is breaking down some as we go deeper into the month. So you know, there are positive signs. If you look at the raw temperature forecast, they get us back into the 80s, the 40s at the end of the next 14, 15 days.
Oh, God.
So that
and
would be
good. Said 80s. That was all exciting.
I know.
We took it off.
It has happened in March, you know. Yeah. We did a statistical look at how many years, and we have 148 to look at that we've had 60 degree temps. It's 84% in the next month. How many years have had 70 degree or warmer temps? 52%. So climatologically, you could argue, and March is our fastest warming month.
Mm-hmm.
So you could argue that you know
that's
we
fine.
May have some warm
fine.
Days before it's all over.
Listen, if it gets to the 40s, it'll be the fastest warming month based on how it started.
Gosh, that'll feel great.
Thank you, Tom. Appreciate
guys,
it, sir.
See you later.
All right.
Much to cover today.
Sorry to drag you into all of that.
No, that is very interesting. Ro, I'm always interested in your thoughts on this, and I think everybody is because it's on all of our minds, and we may come down in different places on these issues, but it's our country, and we're interested in it.
Yes, we should be, or maybe we shouldn't.
Yeah,
I don't know anymore. But Kim Jong-un's going to solve all of this. He's got some suggestions. All right, thank you very much.
Thanks, Tom.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
All right, let us now check in with Kim. What's coming up at the bottom of the hour?
Picking a mayoral candidate may explain today's low voter turnout.
And in WGN traffic, North Barrington, an accident, Route 59 at Miller Road. In Bucktown, the right lane is blocked to Fullerton Avenue westbound under the Kennedy Expressway with an accident. And in Elmhurst, a crash at Robert Palmer Drive and East Park Avenue. For personalized traffic on demand, get the Traffic Chicago app approved by the mortgage experts of Team Hochberg. Just search TRAFFIX Chicago. I'm Jen DeSalvo in WGN Traffic Central.
Brocon Show with Anna DeBlantis. 720 WGN.
It's election day.
You
may not know it if you're just sort of passing by a polling place because there's not all that much activity, according to what we're hearing.
Right.
Turnout's really low,
and
turns
the weather,
out.
The weather's okay. I mean, it's not like there's a snowstorm.
Right.
It's not like there's a hurricane.
Can't blame that.
Earthquake.
Yeah.
It's not like that. Like the power's out.
Arctic blast, whatever that was. We're not seeing that now.
Mike Flynn. Oh, Mike. Mike Flannery.
Big sigh.
Big exhale right there as we took the phone call. Mike is joining us because he's the political editor of Chicago. And Mike and I are going to be sharing the stage tonight at the Fox 32 talking about this in case anybody wants to tune in and watch me wear
glasses.
It's
the most fun night of the year.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
And, you make the party, dude.
Let's talk about this party. This party, we call the party, Mike, and no one's showing up.
Well, I just got off the horn with Jim Allen over at the Chicago Board of Election Commissioners, and actually turnout is surging right now.
Better be.
It looks like in this 4 o'clock hour between 4 and 5, there are likely to be more votes cast than in any hour so far today.
Oh.
I mean, the peak was 20. In the 3 p.m. hour, there were about 29,000 votes cast. We're going to get more than 40,000, maybe 44,000, 45,000 in this hour. So it's going up. Yeah, but it's still disappointingly low. It would be great to see a turnout like we had back in the midterms back in November, 61%.
Huge. And a lot of younger voters, too, or maybe, I guess it may be even safer to say a lot of people of different age groups voted, whereas now we're seeing it heavily weighted amongst older voters.
It's the gray beards that are turning out now. Look, one number for you. The millennials ages 25 to 34 back in the midterms, which, of course, was nationalized. If you loved President Trump or you loved to hate President Trump, you got out and voted. 189,000 voters between the ages of 25 and 34 turned out in November in the city. So far today, only about 51,000. So 140,000 of them are MIA. Time to maybe we should just go through the bars,
well-being
and the dance
check
clubs.
Yeah, we did the dance clubs at 4:30 in the morning. Yes, at 4:30 in the afternoon. No, I don't think that's how that's going to go. But is it a function of the fact that there were so many people in the race that there wasn't a really compelling storyline that of a combat between two people that drew attention? This is the one thing, if we've learned anything from Donald Trump, he's a genius at this, which he does understand this principle. He understands the entertainment principle, is that conflict is the key to drawing people's attention. So no matter what it is, what he's having for breakfast is a conflict. Everything ends up being political. It's almost exhausting how political he is. He's never human. He's always political. Fine. It's been very... Listen, he's had great success doing that. First time comer, and he became president of the United States. So that seems to work. But there wasn't any of that kind of special sauce in this election for people because everybody was just kind of staying to themselves. There wasn't any kind of this person's a total crook. I mean, there's a little bit against Daley and Preckwinkle, but not even enough that would stick.
Well, two things. 14 candidates, a lot of them unknown. You know, even Toni Preckwinkle's been around for a long time. She's served multiple terms as the president of the Cook County Board. I had people come up to me and say, "Just who is she? Is she married? Does she have kids?" People don't know anything about her, even though she's been around a long time. The scrutiny when you become mayor, there's nothing like it. Maybe governor, but you know, Cook County Board president. For whatever reason, it seems people aren't paying attention. Then the other important thing is the other important thing is poll after poll, row showed a large number of undecided voters, And I'll tell you, what's happening today is those undecided, some of the surveys as recently as a few weeks ago showed 20% back last month, 25% undecided. You know what? They've decided not to vote.
That's interesting. That is fascinating.
They're going to wait until
make everybody else make the decision, right?
They'll let everybody else narrow the field down to two, and then they'll tune in, perhaps.
Who does this help?
Well, I mean, if you look at the numbers, I mean, you get the Board of Election Commissioners has put out ward by ward registrations. I mean, it's breathtaking. You know, you can see the parts of Chicago that are shrinking. Those old time powerhouse African American wards like the sixth, the late mayor Eugene Sawyer's sixth ward, and the seventh ward in South Shore, and the eighth ward, John Stroger, his dad's ward. All those wards actually had net declines or just about zero, but all of them had declines in voter registration. Now look at the downtown ward, the 42nd, where your new studios are, where Fox 32 studios are. A 39% increase in voter registration compared to 4 years ago.
Mm.
I mean, the vast majority of the 160,000 new voter registrations compared to 4 years ago are in these downtown wards and the North Lakefront wards and to a lesser degree Beverly, the 19th ward, 2,500 new voters, Northwest Side. Some
all right, don't read the paper. Now you're reading a flow chart.
Let's get back to Chicago.
What is the impact? I am told that there is by political insiders today, you know, you make your phone calls during the commercial breaks and you talk to guys who go, who's this? But when I am speaking to them, they are telling me an important thing that Burke and Madigan and those kinds of machines are very quiet in this race. And perhaps because they don't want to create any more trouble.
And their fingerprints will be all over it if there's, we can always go back and see. We can see what the captains did and where they did it by the disparities in the vote totals, right? And that could be used against a Burke or a Madigan this time in a citywide contest. And
literally by a prosecutor, you'd say, you did this and you did that, and these guys, and so by doing that, they're not hustling their voters out.
Yeah, yeah. Now, anecdotally, I mean, you and I have seen these elections where we hear this narrative that's being circulated among the insiders, and then when you get the actual vote totals, well, it sometimes is different than what we've heard. So yeah, that's what's being talked about right now. I always like to count the votes.
You know, as I was encouraging to hear you say that there's been a surge in the 4 to 5 o'clock hour in voters, because it just seemed like there's a lot at stake and there are so many choices, and that because of there being so many choices, particularly in the race for mayor, that it can come down to very few votes. We've all talked about this, and then so it's hard to make the argument to yourself your vote doesn't matter or doesn't count, because when the votes are counted, Flannery, isn't it possible that this will come down to, I don't know, handfuls of votes? And if there's no clear winner tonight, what will happen?
Well, that's right. I mean, here's the thing. Look, you put your finger right on it. The spokesman for the Board of Election Commissioners said that there are likely to be about 20,000 vote-by-mail ballots outstanding at the end of business tonight. And, something over 20,000 vote-by-mail ballots. So imagine that the difference between the second place and third place finisher is 100 or 200 votes.
Yeah.
We have 20,000 vote by mail ballots outstanding, and state law requires that as long as they're postmarked by today, long as they arrive at the Board of Election Commissioners by March 12th, they must be counted.
That's right.
So this thing could go on for days or weeks.
That's right.
And the runoff's on April 2nd.
So it's like 2 weeks away.
It's 5 weeks from today. And by the time they certify the election, the runoff will only be 3 weeks away.
Now
Jussie Smollett could probably mail the stuff tomorrow or the next day.
I'd like to put that on the wall.
He's got the postal inspection officers kind of busy already.
Right, they're already busy. Right. So what? It says that we mailed this on March 11th. That was close enough. Hey, I feel a great night coming up here on the Fox 32. That's all I can tell you, because it's going to be very, very.
Oh,
yeah. And I hate to do my personal business on the phone with you right now, but so what are you wearing? What time are we on tonight?
We'd love to have you here by 8 o'clock, and then we're gonna go live on the book face. I mean the Facebook. I'm not a master of the social media. And then at 9 o'clock we go on and we're gonna transition to an open ended election special at 9:30.
Election special at 9:30. All right, so we're starting on the Facebook at 8 o'clock.
So, how long do you think you're going to be on set tonight, gentlemen? Do you think it's going to be? What point is it over? Even if it's not over.
Well, you know, that's a good question. How, you know, Alan says the Board of Election Commissioners thinks that they'll have 80 to 90%, if not more, of the vote total in by 10 p.m.
Right. They're saying that. But if it's
close and there's 20,000 vote by mail ballots outstanding, mm-hmm. I mean, maybe we'll just stay on the air until next week.
All right. Settles it.
I brought a onesie in case that
I was going to say, bring a change of underwear
in
case.
I did.
Okay.
I'm going to wear
sandwich.
Winnie the Pooh onesie and just wear that on the set. All right. Thank you very much, Mike.
See you
tonight.
Thank you. Looking forward to it, Rob.
All right. There he goes. Mike Flannery. See us tonight on the Fox 32.
The top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Four, three, two, one.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna Tavlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
Checking in at
number five.
Congressman Adam Kinzinger, who serves as a lieutenant colonel in the Wisconsin Air National Guard. A lot of people wonder, how is that possible? Let me just quickly explain that, because I've gotten that question a number of times today. You don't have to live in the state in which you are a member of the National Guard for the state. You can join a unit in another state, a foreign state, as I would like to call it, as Wisconsin, I believe, is, especially in the Air Guard. If you're, if it's, you know, closer to where you live, which it is in Congressman's case, and also if it's something that fits what your skill set is.
Oh,
so that's just something, a little piece of information. It's right there for those. Everybody in the Guard understands it, but there's a lot of civilians out there like, what?
Why would that be, right?
Congressman from Illinois, how could he be in the Wisconsin Air National Guard?
It is unusual.
It's not actually unusual. It's totally, it happens, and it is a...
It happens more often than not? Would people pick a different state?
It happens quite a bit, especially the Air Guard. It happens quite a bit.
Let's just say this is pretty cool that he's still flying military planes while being a congressman.
Yeah,
well, that is cool. He'll be joining us at 4:40. There might be a problem, though, because he might have said something about it, but he might have contradicted publicly his commanding officer in his unit by saying what he said, and that could be its own issue. But that's the same. Well, listen.
5:40.
5:40. Stay tuned for
that. A lot to cover there.
Aww.
He said that his recent deployment to the Mexican border convinced him that the president's controversial national emergency declaration is warranted.
Does it constitute a national emergency?
Yeah, I think it does. You know, I went down there kind of undecided. You know, I put on my lieutenant colonel hat, was apolitical, but obviously I'm looking at this, getting the information I can. And I think if this was just an issue of immigration, it wouldn't constitute a national emergency. But what I saw was really disturbing. Let me give you just a couple quick examples. And I was just a small part of all the operations that were being done. We had a mission where we found 70 pounds of methamphetamines on somebody that was coming over. And I'm just a very small part of that. This is the fourth time I've been to the border, my first time in Arizona, completely different terrain than my prior in Texas. Texas, by the way, I was there under President Obama. So the Guard's mission on the border is nothing new.
Right. That is absolutely true. He's been a longtime friend and one of the cohorts on this show. Actually co-hosted this show and was on the other radio station with me a number of times. And he's been going down there, you know, over the last decade, he's been going down there.
Well, it'll be interesting to hear his observations at 5:40 because he saw some things that he feels fall under that umbrella of this is a crisis. Right. He actually saw them and witnessed them.
We'll find out what his thoughts are coming up then. In the meantime, there's this.
Number four.
Another congressman, Matt Gaetz. Or do you say Gates? Appeared to threaten Michael Cohen on Twitter just moments ago, just over an hour ago. Now, Gaetz, who has represented Florida's first congressional district since 2017, tweeted, "Hey, Michael Cohen, do your wife and father-in-law know about your girlfriends? Maybe tonight would be a good time for that chat. I wonder if she'll remain faithful when you're in prison. She's about to learn a lot." And then he went on to say this when confronted by reporters.
Folks could think that the tweet could be witness tampering. I know you're not on these committees that are holding the hearings.
Yeah, those folks would be wrong. This isn't witness tampering, it's witness testing. And when people like Michael Cohen, who's about to go to prison for lying, come before the Congress, there is an enhanced responsibility on the part of members of Congress to test that veracity, to test the truthfulness and character of the witness, and I think we ought to do it with great vigor.
Should it be perceived as a threat, which you wrote?
Listen, I don't threaten anybody. Michael Cohen threatens people. If you go back and look at the phone conversations he's had with reporters, I think he told one reporter that what he was going to do to him was effing disgusting. So Michael Cohen, by his own admission, is a PhD in threats and intimidation. All I'm doing is saying that if someone is going to come before the Congress and continue their stream of lies, that they ought to be prepared to set the four corners of those lies. Like, we already know that Michael Cohen lies to Congress. We already know that Michael Cohen lies to law enforcement. Now we're going to find out if Michael Cohen lies to his own family.
Have you passed along your feelings on this to your colleagues who are on the committee that are going to be talking to
them? I have regular conversations with my colleagues about the witnesses that come before our committees, and it's my hope that we'll provide a robust testing of Michael Cohen's truthfulness and veracity, because he's a liar through and through.
All right.
Great. Thanks, everybody.
All right. You're welcome.
Where do you get the information from? Isn't that a big question here, where that came from?
Yeah, that's one question.
And did he deliver it to someone to then ask him about it, or is someone already in the committee who said, I'm going to be asking this?
This guy's Twitter profile bio.
What does it say?
Florida man proudly serving the first district in Congress. Quote, he's a machine, handsome and going places, says at real Donald Trump.
Oh, man.
Oh, no.
God, there's it so tells many you everything dorks you need to know. In Congress. Oh, my God.
Yeah, he's actually... He's been targeted a number of times for ridicule by shows, including that Sacha Baron Cohen show.
That's right. He was almost caught on that.
Yeah. They went to his office and tried to catch him in one of their, you know, their stings, and they weren't able to. he didn't fall for it. But now he is good looking. He's strapping, and he does. He's very proud of himself, which is all fine. I mean, he's members of Congress attended. You know,
they tend to have some of those sort of qualities.
I don't think he'll go shirtless quite as much as a Congressman Kinzinger, but he's going to. But he's a guy that he's out there. This is ridiculously stupid on his part.
It's just, why would you do it, right? If you know it's going to come out, you know it's going to be embarrassing if it's true, then what do you need
to... He's trying to fight for the president.
Let me explain something to you. Michael Cohen got here because he was the lawyer and best friend and willing to take a bullet for the president, and he lied to Congress about how great Donald Trump was. Remember that?
He lied about his own business, too. Didn't that kind of get him in trouble?
Yes. But he also lied about things pertaining to the president.
Of course. Absolutely.
So now the Republicans are like, yeah, look at him. He was a liar. When he was lying about the things the president was doing? That's not the best thing to bring up right now. Because you can make the argument, I think most humans, forget about Americans, just humans, would see that a guy who, you know, got busted... going to go to jail for lying to Congress for perjury is going to come back and wants to set the record straight by telling the truth. People could believe that that's going to happen. Now, Michael Cohen, I'm going to tell you something. He was patient zero of the guys that I hated that surrounded Donald Trump.
Yes.
Patient zero. I still do.
He's
I think
on your list.
He's a
he's
thug.
On your list.
He's a bad guy. He's everything he's the worst of the worst when it comes to like thuggy lawyers who want to protect, you know, their clients who are doing the wrong things. I just, the whole thing rubs me totally wrong. But he's not up there because he was a lifelong enemy of the president of the United States. Republicans seem to have a very short memory about that, and they're hoping against hope that other Republicans, I'm telling you, Republican leaders, they want their constituents, they want their voters to have a short memory about that. I can't believe how absolutely, this is just insane to me, how Republican leaders, Republican elected officials in Washington are taking for granted this notion that their voters, that members of their party, lifelong in many cases, members of their party, are not going to see through this. It's so insulting. And I don't see this ending well for them. And it's a thing. It's a very important. You got to have a strong Republican Party to have a strong United States of America. I believe that firmly. And I don't think this is good for either purpose.
Kevin, you might want to change your Twitter bio from Man on the Make says Rokon.
No.
Man on the Make, isn't that what you call
Kevin? Mike Ditka. Is it Mike Ditka?
No, Mike Ditka called you Muscle Man.
Muscle Man.
Ro called you the man on the make.
That's true.
Yeah. Right. Says Rokon from the Rokon Show.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Number three.
Oh, wait. Hold on. Should I take a break here first? Let's do that before we get to number three. I just moved along. I'm so out of my mind right now. I don't know what to do. Matt Gaetz, though, looks like he might be the much better-looking brother of that guy who's the refrigerator, who was the attorney general.
Oh.
That Matthew Whitaker?
Matthew Whitaker.
Yeah, they look like... Whitaker looks like his older brother who just barely missed the NFL. Top 5-5 continues.
Number three.
Singer and voice coach, you know, of The Voice, not just a voice coach, John Legend. You're familiar with him.
We know John
Legend. Received credit for being among the few members of the music industry willing to speak out against R. Kelly when the R&B singer faced troubling allegations of sexual assault. Legend opened up on the Today Show about his choice in participating in the documentary that seems to be the one that brought R. Kelly down.
His victims deserve justice. So glad that the victims got to have their voices heard. And I think them having their voices heard, this story being retold, because it's been told before, but I think being retold through that medium really brought the issue to a lot of people's attention. And I think it inspired the law enforcement to move on some things that they weren't moving on before.
What do you think should happen to him?
You know, I think, you know, let justice play out. Obviously, it's difficult to prove anything beyond a reasonable doubt in court. So we'll see what happens. But I think his victims deserve justice.
And then earlier today, Michael Avenatti, who's representing two of the women, the families of two of the women who have been involved, allegedly with R. Kelly, when they were underage, was on this program earlier and commented on the issue of R. Kelly already violating the terms of his release.
So he went to this McDonald's, which he regularly trolled at over the years. It's a pretty well known McDonald's. I think it's a flagship here in Chicago. And I believe that he had contact with individuals less than 18 years of age, and he's not to be having any contact with anyone less than 18 years of age. Period.
I'm not sure that actually, if he's in line with people under 18.
At McDonald's?
Yeah,
I don't know. I mean, the story was that the woman on the first videotape, according to her relatives who were interviewed at the time, that that's where he picked her up and promised her that he was going to make her a star, and she was interested in recording and being an artist, and those were promises her relatives said at the time that were made, and that he would regularly go back there, because at prom time, when he knew young girls would be there.
Let me just tell you that R. Kelly has frequented that for decades.
Absolutely. We all knew it.
Yeah. I mean, the first time he had law enforcement contact was there because he was playing his music too loud. I'll never forget that story. And they're like, the Chicago police had to, you know, they got into they had to issue a ticket to then ascending star R. Kelly, Robert Sylvester Kelly,
It doesn't have the same ring to
of
it.
Chicago. For playing his music too loud. Everybody's like, why is this guy who's like, you know, the biggest, this gigantic star, why is he at the Rock and Roll McDonald's?
Right. A lot of questions there. Why were the people around him seemingly, allegedly helping, doing what he was doing?
Here we go.
Number two.
It's election day in the city, and not a lot of people are showing up. And Marisol Hernandez from the Board of Elections stresses that people should be showing up.
We have 14 candidates. It's hard to make up one's mind. I understand totally. But we have to have, we want to have clear winners. We want as many people to vote today as possible. As you've seen from the various news reports and polls, it almost looks like there's could be a virtual tie among certain candidates.
Just say it. Come out and vote. You got 90 minutes left to vote. Go vote. Just say what you mean, Marcel.
You don't be looking backward on this election saying, oh, if only I had voted, because it might be that close. There is somewhat of a surge they're seeing later in this afternoon.
Yes, but not enough of a surge. Get out there. Get out there.
Yep.
All right.
I think that was a good PSA you did there, Ro.
Thank you.
Listen. Vote!
Listen. I mean, listen. She's like, well, I think maybe there might be. No!
We're running out of time here.
Right! That's
true.
Let's have a little urgency here. What, is she going to offend people by telling them to go out and vote? There's nothing offensive about that.
Panic a little bit. That's all we need.
That's what we got.
You got to respond to that.
You have to have urgency. Listen, if panic is the way that you express urgency, then panic. That's what I do.
You usually panic after it, too, though.
All the time. Mm-hmm. Never not in a state of panic.
True.
All right. And finally. Wait, hold on. I got to give you the number. Otherwise, you wouldn't know where you are.
Nope.
Number one.
Facebook is 15 years old. Facebook's almost old enough to drive. Think about that.
Everybody who likes to punch themselves in the face because they've been on it for almost that long, raise your hand.
Oh wait, that's me.
There you go. How about that? Now your grandmother's on Facebook, though. Makes it a lot less cool.
Yeah. There was a shift in the demo.
Yeah, a lot less cool.
A big shift.
Then you went to the Insta, right? And then all of a sudden now your mom's on Insta. Look at this. I've got my needlepoint.
You know, Instagram is the best place to look at little dog and cat videos, and I think that's the only thing that it should be used for.
And a Kardashian. Uh-huh. You get to look at a Kardashian. Have you seen the what's the one that they just got cheated on?
Oh, Khloe.
Khloe. Yeah. You get to see her. She's got some revenge style.
She looks
stuff on Instagram
amazing.
Where she's like wearing barely anything that's kind of painted on to her and like, hey, look at me, I'm hot.
But then did you see the reflection they didn't Photoshop? There was like, you know, they kind of Photoshopped her, but not the reflection. So people called her out that, you know.
I find that hard to believe that anybody would Photoshop a Kardashian.
No,
anyway, the point
doesn't
is
happen.
This.
You would, it's shocking.
Happy birthday, Facebook. What does Jimmy Fallon think?
Hey, I saw that Facebook recently celebrated its 15th anniversary. I can't believe it's been around for so long. Do you remember what it was like before Facebook? You remembered your friends' birthdays because you actually cared.
Bang.
Before Facebook, you spent time at work actually working. Before Facebook, the only way to find out your uncle was racist was seeing him on Thanksgiving.
Stalking the exes, too, was another. It was much harder back in the day.
Yeah. Now,
much harder.
Totally easy. Mm-hmm. That's why I got people for Facebook. People go, so where are you on social media? I go, I have no idea.
My people do that.
I have no idea. I think I'm on Snapchat. And if I'm and if you and if you find me on Tinder, it's totally my producers. All right, here
it's
we
not
go.
Me.
The top five at five.
Finally, the music meets the man.
Yes. Right,
Congressman Adam Kinzinger is joining us, and earlier today, he's really been at the top of the news here for the last couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, I know. And generally, we have you on when you're not at the top of the news. Now you are at the top of the news, and this is it's a big story. A couple of weeks ago, you were deployed as part of your regular service to the Wisconsin Air National Guard. You were sent down to the border. This is not your first deployment down to the Mexican border as a member of the Air Guard. And we'll talk about that in just a second. But then you came back and you refined your position on the building of a border wall and specifically the president's emergency order to fund that wall. So much so that you got on Meet the Press, right? Or no, on Face the Nation over the weekend. I get all those things confused. And I just wonder, is this a change in what you thought before? Describe the whole process you went through here.
Yeah, it's pretty nuanced because it's a nuanced issue. So I went down neutral on the emergency order. You know, the reality, I've always been for the wall. I just don't think you should shut down government to get there because it never works. Government shutdowns don't lead to anything. So I went down there, and you know what I saw in Arizona? I've worked three prior deployments to Texas. Those were under President Obama, which I think is important to note. But, you know, what I saw, and I mean, I have proof on my phone that I wish I could share, but Customs and Border Patrol could release these videos because they have them all. I mean, things from human trafficking, you know, coyotes that work for the drug cartels bringing people over and then abandoning them at the first sound of an airplane or if they think Customs and Border Patrol is on them and you leave. I mean, people don't understand the rugged terrain out there. They leave these folks to die. Arizona finds a couple hundred dead folks out there, dead migrants every year. And then the number of drugs. I mean, one of my crews, their very first mission, they got 70 pounds of methamphetamine off somebody. A different state that flies the same plane got a huge amount of fentanyl, enough to destroy basically an entire city. And this is, we were just doing a small part of this operation, and this is daily. And I look at this and I say, you know, when drug cartels are convincing people to give them their life savings so that they can walk them into the United States only to then abandon them, that is not compassion. Compassion, I believe, is a secure border and an immigration system that is welcoming, but does it after we can control who comes in, too. And so I haven't changed my position on immigration at all. What I believe, though, is that it's in the president's authority and that, frankly, he's right to want to build this wall.
Right to want to build a wall, but do you think he's right on the national emergency?
Yeah, I do. And, you know, look, if you nuance, if you look at the reality of Congress creating this national emergency, look at all the national emergencies that exist, I think he's within his rights to declare it. Ultimately, it will be the courts that decide that because, you know, as I read it, not being a lawyer, that's going to be argued in the courts. But I think he's within his right to declare it. I wish we'd have done it in Congress. I voted to do it in Congress. But, you know, given it what it is and what I saw, and I said, look, okay, at this point, we have a decision to make. I feel comfortable with the decision I've made. And we just passed the bill to reject it today in the House, despite my vote.
Right. I just saw that. And then so it's headed to the Senate, where does it have their support there? You have seen a few Republican defectors say, you know, I may be on board with all of this, but I do think that the president has the authority to declare a national emergency. But should he do it, and should he do it over this? There seem to be even a few people, members of your party, who are grappling with that question.
Yeah, I agree. And like I said, everybody that makes points on this is to an extent right, and I can see where they're coming from, you know, and I'm not sure what it's going to end up doing in the Senate, whether it passes or not. It probably will. But, you know, if people have all these great points, I don't come here, you know, absolutely, utterly convinced that this is the best way to do it, but what I say is, I saw what I saw, and then coming here and deciding whether to terminate this national emergency, I'd vote no. I think Congress has given too much power to the presidency, but they have given the president the power of national emergency.
Well, but isn't that the issue? I mean, you know, you're a congressman. Don't you want to protect the primacy of the Congress as the keepers of the purse?
Yeah, you do. And the president would violate the law if he created new appropriations. The question is, can he move money from different accounts into this? And if you look at the accounts, counter-drug and MILCON, I don't think it's military construction. I don't think military construction ends up getting used, to be honest with you. But that is all existing appropriations that under this he is moving to, you know, this construction of a barrier or the counter drug being the nexus to counter drug. Now, if the president said, I'm just doing $5 billion extra dollars that Congress hasn't appropriated, that would be a clear violation of the law.
Yeah, it is interesting. You're seeing a slide in the middle toward the wall or a barrier of some sort.
Yeah,
it doesn't necessarily mean, ocean to ocean, as they like to say, or sea to sea. But it is a... in terms of like what you do, I mean, it's interesting that you're at the very fulcrum of this debate right now, because what your mission was, Congressman, when you were in the Air Guard over the last couple of weeks, was doing electronic reconnaissance where there would not be a wall. And there still may be areas where there will not be a wall. And that job is very important. That needs to be funded as well.
And I'll tell you, the areas that Arizona has a wall, I didn't have to work those areas. What generally, put this briefly, we'd have a radar plane fly over, it could pick up some of these groups, and then we would respond to whatever the Border Patrol prioritized. And it's not like then they just drive their truck to this group. They have to walk 3 miles through very rugged terrain, and by the time they get to this group, they're gassed, they're tired. This group does what we call a bomb burst, where they run in every different direction, and they can only usually get one or two. The problem with that, the first to run and abandon the group are the coyotes that run back to Mexico. They get away, and then a lot of these people run out of adrenaline, and then all of a sudden realize when we can't find them, they are lost, and the nearest civilization is 50 miles away in some cases. And that's why you end up with all the bodies that end up out there.
Yeah, I don't doubt that this is a problem. Is this a national emergency? And to me, a national emergency is something that is exigent, where the circumstances changed. And I personally disagree with you on the issue of the presidency being able to, the president or, you know, the office of the president being able to declare a national emergency on something that is not exigent, that did not change. This has not statically changed. The issue is, what do we do about it? And one of your colleagues, who I know you know, Dan Crenshaw, who is also a former active duty military, right? He came to prominence during the Saturday Night Live in the fall, mm-hmm. because he had an eye patch, and they made fun of him for wearing an eye patch, and he'd lost it in an IED attack when he was a Navy SEAL, right? So this guy's a true American hero. He was on the circus this week. We just talked to Mark McKinnon about this. He was on the circus that was on Sunday night, and he was talking about the need for the wall because the wall works. And he made a very compelling, I think as you're doing about the wall, a compelling and logical argument for why we need more physical barrier than we already have, right? And that's where the conversation should be.
Amen.
The question is when the president makes it an all or nothing issue, no matter what it is. When he's having breakfast, he makes it an all or nothing issue, right?
Yeah.
And because we're caught in that, it's almost impossible to get around the rhetorical wall that he builds around all of these issues. So how do you guys and you and Crenshaw and the rest of the Republicans who would like to express the nuance, be allowed the room to express the nuance?
Look, I'll give you an example. I don't think it's a national emergency because there's immigrants coming over. I think it's because of the drugs and the human trafficking. I said at the beginning of my floor speech I gave tonight on this, I said, look, nobody's evil in this debate. The Democrats, I disagree with some of the things they're saying, but I think they mean well. We mean well. Everybody kind of has the same intention, but we are, as we do so many times, we're talking past each other and making an emotional argument. The reality is, if we sat logically and said to the American people, we want a barrier, we want technology, and we also want to deal with the 15 million that are here, give them a pathway to make them legal, deal with the DACA population, and fix, the high-skilled visa situation. 80% of Americans would agree, but we can't. We just keep talking past each other, and it's funny. I come out and say I'm supportive of a wall, and now all of a sudden I'm the biggest enemy to the Democrats that ever existed, but then I come out and say, but I also, we have to deal with a pathway to legalization, and I'm the biggest enemy to some others on the right. And it's, the truth is somewhere in the middle, and we've got to get there.
Right. And all those things can happen.
Well said, Congressman. I think it's amazing how many people, because that I know, and they know that I know you, and they were texting me this morning, what's going on? And I think it's really important for you to get an opportunity to, to tell your side of the story here, because it is, listen, This is an awful situation for those who are trying to get away from what they're trying to get away from, and they're coming up here, especially for the parents with their kids. It's tough. Your heart breaks for them. You imagine in your own life, would you ever have to imagine having to leave here? Where would you go? And let's say you were trying to get into Canada. How would you do it? And would you, if you were so desperate, you had to run away now? And how would you fund yourself in doing that? And if bad guys got a hold of you, you could just sort of imagine. There was a movie from 40 years ago called El Norte about Central Americans coming through Mexico to go to try to sneak into the country. People should see that movie because it hasn't changed in 40 years.
Yeah.
And it's heartbreaking. So how do we deal with that? How do we help stay? That was the whole idea of stabilizing these countries in Central America in the first place.
Yeah,
or trying to stabilize their economies. And now you got Venezuela, and God knows what's going to happen there. And so you got it's a tough situation. But cooler heads must prevail, and a smart solution that, as you said, Congressman, is done with compassion going to be the answer.
That's right.
Well, this is a way of getting back to all my friends simultaneously and saying, I'm not crazy. He's not crazy.
No one's crazy. Can you respond?
We can all just talk to each other, and we find out we agree on a lot more than I think we don't.
Yep.
All right.
Thank you, Congressman. Appreciate
Thanks, Congressman.
It.
Yeah, anytime.
All right. Bye.
See ya.
Finally, the music meets the man.
Yes.
All right. Congressman Adam Kinzinger is joining us. And earlier today, it's really been at the top of the news here for the last couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, I know. And generally, we have you on when you're not at the top of the news. Now you are at the top of the news. And this is it's a big story. A couple of weeks ago, you were deployed as part of your regular service to the Wisconsin Air National Guard. You were sent down to the border. This is not your first deployment down to the Mexican border as a member of the Air Guard. And we'll talk about that in just a second. But then you came back and you refined your position on the building of a border wall, and specifically the president's emergency order to fund that wall. So much so that you got on Meet the Press, right? Or no, on Face the Nation over the weekend. I get all those things confused. And I just wonder, is this a change in what you thought before? Describe the whole process you went through here.
Yeah, it's pretty nuanced because it's a nuanced issue. So I went down neutral on the emergency order. You know, the reality, I've always been for the wall. I just don't think you should shut down government to get there because it never works. Government shutdowns don't lead to anything. So I went down there, and you know what I saw in Arizona? I've worked three prior deployments to Texas. Those were under President Obama, which I think is important to know. But, you know, what I saw, and I mean, I have proof on my phone that I wish I could share, but Customs and Border Patrol could release these videos because they have them all. I mean, things from human trafficking, you know, coyotes that work for the drug cartels bringing people over and then abandoning them at the first sound of an airplane or if they think Customs and Border Patrol is on them, and you leave. I mean, people don't understand the rugged terrain out there. They leave these folks to die. Arizona finds a couple hundred dead folks out there, dead migrants every year. And then the number of drugs. I mean, one of my crews, their very first mission, they got 70 pounds of methamphetamine off somebody. A different state that flies the same plane got a huge amount of fentanyl, enough to destroy basically an entire city. And this is, we were just doing a small part of this operation, and this is daily. And I look at this and I say, you know, when drug cartels are convincing people to give them their life savings so that they can walk them into the United States only to then abandon them, that is not compassion. Compassion, I believe, is a secure border and an immigration system that is welcoming, but does it after we can control who comes in, too. And so I haven't changed my position on immigration at all. What I believe, though, is that it's in the president's authority and that, frankly, he's right to want to build this wall.
Right to want to build a wall, but do you think he's right on the national emergency?
Yeah, I do. And, you know, look, if you nuance, if you look at the reality of Congress creating this national emergency, look at all the national emergencies that exist, I think it's within his rights to declare it. Ultimately, it will be the courts that decide that because, you know, as I read it, not being a lawyer, that's going to be argued in the courts. But I think he's within his right to declare it. I wish we'd have done it in Congress. I voted to do it in Congress. But, you know, given it what it is and what I saw, and I said, look, okay, at this point, we have a decision to make. I feel comfortable with the decision I've made, and we just passed the bill to reject it today in the House, despite my vote.
Right, I just saw that. And then so it's headed to the Senate, where does it have their support there? You have seen a few Republican defectors say, you know, I may be on board with all of this, but I do think that the president has the authority to declare a national emergency, but should he do it, and should he do it over this? There seem to be even a few people, members of your party, who are grappling with that question.
Yeah, I agree. And like I said, everybody that makes points on this is to an extent right, and I can see where they're coming from, you know, and I'm not sure what it's going to end up doing in the Senate, whether it passes or not. It probably will. But, you know, if people have all these great points. I don't come here, you know, absolutely, utterly convinced that this is the best way to do it, but what I say is I saw what I saw, and then coming here and deciding whether to terminate this national emergency, I'd vote no. I think Congress has given too much power to the presidency, but they have given the president the power of national emergency.
Well, but isn't that the issue? I mean, you know, you're a congressman. Don't you want to protect the primacy of the Congress as the keepers of the purse?
Yeah, you do. And the president would violate the law if he created new appropriations. The question is, can he move money from different accounts into this? And if you look at the accounts, counter-drug and MILCON, I don't think it's military construction. I don't think military construction ends up getting used, to be honest with you. But that is all existing appropriations that under this he is moving to, you know, this construction of a barrier or the counter-drug being the nexus to counter-drug. Now, if the president said, I'm just doing $5 billion extra dollars that Congress hasn't appropriated, that would be a clear violation of the law.
Yeah, it is interesting. You're seeing a slide in the middle toward the wall or a barrier of some sort.
Yeah,
it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, ocean to ocean, as they like to say, or sea to sea. But it is a in terms of like what you do. I mean, it's interesting that you're at the very fulcrum of this debate right now, because what your mission was, Congressman, when you were in the Air Guard over the last couple of weeks, was doing electronic reconnaissance where there would not be a wall. And there still may be areas where there will not be a wall. And that job is very important. That needs to be funded as well.
And I'll tell you, the areas that Arizona has a wall, I didn't have to work those areas. What generally, to very put this briefly, we'd have a radar plane fly over, it could pick up some of these groups, and then we would respond to whatever the Border Patrol prioritized. And it's not like then they just drive their truck to this group. They have to walk 3 miles through very rugged terrain, and by the time they get to this group, they're gassed, they're tired. This group does what we call a bomb burst, where they run in every different direction, and they can only usually get one or two. The problem with that, the first to run and abandon the group are the coyotes that run back to Mexico. They get away, and then a lot of these people run out of adrenaline, and then all of a sudden realize when we can't find them, they are lost, and the nearest civilization is 50 miles away in some cases. And that's why you end up with all the bodies that end up out there.
Yeah, I mean, listen, yeah. I don't doubt that this is a problem. Is this a national emergency? And to me, a national emergency is something that is exigent, where the circumstances changed. And I personally disagree with you on the issue of the presidency being able to, the president, or, you know, the office of the president being able to declare a national emergency on something that is not exigent, that did not change. This has not statically changed. The issue is, what do we do about it? And there is, and you know, one of your colleagues, who I know you know, Dan Crenshaw, who is also a former active duty military, right? He came to prominence during the Saturday Night Live in the fall, mm-hmm. when, because he had an eye patch, and they made fun of him for wearing an eye patch, and he'd lost it in an IED attack when he was a Navy SEAL, right? So this guy's a true American hero. He was on the circus this week. We just talked to Mark McKinnon about this. He was on the circus that was on Sunday night, and he was talking about the need for the wall, because the wall works. And he made a very compelling, I think as you're doing about the wall, a compelling and logical argument for why we need more physical barrier than we already have, right? And that's where the conversation should be.
Amen.
The question is, when the president makes it an all or nothing issue, no matter what it is, when he's having breakfast, he makes it an all or nothing issue, right? And because we're caught in that, it's almost impossible to get around the rhetorical wall that he builds around all of these issues. So how do you guys and you and Crenshaw and the rest of the Republicans who would like to express the nuance, be allowed the room to express the nuance?
Look, I'll give you an example. I don't think it's a national emergency because there's immigrants coming over. I think it's because of the drugs and the human trafficking. I said at the beginning of my floor speech I gave tonight on this, I said, look, nobody's evil in this debate. The Democrats, I disagree with some of the things they're saying, but I think they mean well. We mean well. Everybody kind of has the same intention, but we are, as we do so many times, we're talking past each other and making an emotional argument. The reality is, if we sat logically and said to the American people, we want a barrier, we want technology, and we also want to deal with the 15 million that are here, give them a pathway to make them legal, deal with the DACA population, and fix, you know, the high-skilled visa situation, 80% of Americans would agree. But we can't, we just keep talking past each other. And it's funny, I come out and say I'm supportive of a wall, and now all of a sudden I'm the biggest enemy to the Democrats that ever existed. But then I come out and say, but I also, we have to deal with a pathway to legalization, and I'm the biggest enemy to some others on the right. And it's, you know, the truth is somewhere in the middle, and we've got to get there.
Right. And all those things can happen.
Well said, Congressman. I think it's amazing how many people, because that I know, and they know that I know you, and they were texting me this morning, and what's going on? And I think it's really important for you to get an opportunity to, you know, to tell your side of the story here, because it is. Listen. This is an awful situation for those who are trying to get away from what they're trying to get away from, and they're coming up here, especially for the parents with their kids. It's tough. Your heart breaks for them. You imagine in your own life, would you ever have to imagine having to leave here? Where would you go? And let's say you were trying to get into Canada. How would you do it? And would you, if you were so desperate, you had to run away now? And how would you fund yourself in doing that? And if bad guys got a hold of you, you could just sort of imagine. There was a movie from 40 years ago called El Norte, about Central Americans coming through Mexico to go to try to sneak into the country. People should see that movie because it hasn't changed in 40 years.
Yeah.
And it's heartbreaking. So how do we deal with that? How do we help stay? That was the whole idea of stabilizing these countries in Central America in the first place.
Yeah,
or trying to stabilize their economies. And now you got Venezuela, and God knows what's going to happen there. And so you got it's a tough situation. But cooler heads must prevail, and a smart solution that, as you said, Congressman, is done with compassion going to be the answer.
That's right.
Well, this is a way of getting back to all my friends simultaneously and saying, I'm not crazy, he's not crazy.
No one's crazy. Can you respond?
We can all just talk to each other and then find out we agree on a lot more than I think we don't.
Yep.
All right.
Thank you, Congressman. Appreciate
Thanks, Congressman.
It.
Anytime.
All right. Bye.
See ya.
Sure is. Oh.
45 right. minutes until the polls close in Chicago.
Yep.
And ain't got much time.
Right. And what we have learned here is that the polling place polling polls are not as busy as they should be.
They're not, and certainly this morning was depressingly low. We were on target for an all-time low record turnout when it didn't seem like we were even going to reach 30%. But now there's been a little bit of a pickup this afternoon, maybe as people heard those reports and realize how important it is in what's expected to be a very close race, a tight election, that your vote really, it matters. And 14 candidates with very different visions about how they want to lead this city forward. It matters.
Well,
got 45 minutes.
Let's just stop.
And Lyft is offering 50% off rides, so you can't even use that excuse. It's cold. I don't want to walk.
Go to your polls. If you live in the city of Chicago, go to your polls. If you don't live in the city of Chicago, go to the Chicago polls. And
see if you can vote. I have a lot of friends in the suburbs saying they wish they could vote in this because it's so exciting.
Well, and it also affects them.
I wish I could vote in this. No question.
See?
Yeah. I work here every day. I spend most of my time in Chicago, downtown, spending money.
I know, and I'm moving down here, but I can't vote yet. It's killing me.
You should have just moved in. Didn't you close on your place?
I did, but, you know, I still have my other residence. And
just give up your other residence.
Yeah. Well,
Kim doesn't know the Chicago way yet. She has not figured it out.
Exactly.
So not Chicago yet.
You're
just go to the right polling precinct.
Well, no, you just got a guy. You just go over by, and you stop and you see, you know, you file a provisional ballot. You pay $5 to the guy, you get your own ballot, you walk in, you're good to go.
Kim's going to move in no time. She'll be all Chicago'd up.
I want to explain why it is that when you go to the polling place, your ballot is the size of a placemat.
It's huge.
Yeah. This is not an accident. This is basically court-ordered. Because when it used to just be a card that was like a computer file card that you would place into the booklet, essentially. It was like a metal book that you placed it into, and then you had a little poker deal where you stuck the poker through and it punched out a number inside your ballot. Those were easily hideable in your sleeve or your pocket or something else. You could easily get it, especially, you know, all the elections are, you're wearing a coat in Chicago for your elections.
February,
right?
For sure.
Right? Yeah, it's November. Either it's February, April, or October, right? November. These are the only times we can have an election, so everybody's going to be wearing a coat. So when they were just cards you could put in a pocket, the old way of doing this, and this is illegal, by the way. I want to just point this out. Mike Monaco's busy and he can't help me with this as our lawyer,
game you play, legal, not legal? Yeah, not legal.
Is this legal, that game? This is not legal, but this is what would happen. What you'd do is there'd be a bunch of guys standing around a polling place. You see them now, right? Sometimes.
Yeah, you do.
Back in the day when this was happening, there were like at least 10 guys standing around. Now there's one lonely person wearing a Jerry Joyce shirt. How you doing? Have you voted yet? But
yeah, they used to kind of attack you as you walked in.
Right.
It was very aggressive.
But then, but also, if you knew what time it was, which is the term that they would use, you'd walk up. And you go, hey, what time is it? And they would say, here. And they'd hand you an already punched in ballot and then you'd take it and you'd hand them your fresh ballot when you came back out. So you got you'd walk up to somebody outside. Let me explain this a little bit better. And they would know that you wanted to collect $5 because that was the minimum price for doing this.
Oh, so it was really a cash exchange program. It wasn't like you were trying to be part of some, union voting scheme or something.
Well, wait, you want to keep your job? You want overtime? What are you doing? Hey, some guys had lists back then about who was showing up at the polling place and making sure that they did this. So they would walk in with the already punched in ballot, go get the new ballot, right? As they were, you know, they would keep that in their pocket. They would get their new ballot from the little people behind the desk, the little old and confused people behind the desk. And then you go around to whatever, you know, your voting booth back in the old days. And all you would do is you'd stand in there and you'd act like you were doing something.
Perfect.
Like you were punching out something or whatever it was. And then there was actually a day where you would, you'd actually have to hit the levers. But it would make a recorded record of it. And then you'd have to take that back out to the guy standing outside and hand him either your a not punched ballot or a ballot that you had punched. It showed the whole thing being done, but it had to be a new ballot. And you'd hand the ballot that guy handed you to the people that were putting it in the box.
Gosh, so shady.
Yeah.
The whole thing.
And then you get $5.
Very shady.
Make it 10. Deal.
Actually, in some neighborhoods, it was 10. The poorer the neighborhood, the more expensive it was. Interesting little
fascinating
thing.
I mean, I feel like we get cheat sheets nowadays from all the different unions and stuff, but nobody's paying us money to do it.
Yeah, no, this is the day. But you had to bring the ballot out. See, now you get the cheat sheet, and they're leaving you to your own devices. But I didn't really explain this very well.
Yeah,
but that's basically.
No, I got it.
I get the gist of it.
Like,
but the
idea. Hand out the cheat sheet with a $5 bill attached to it. Right?
No,
because but it was the actual ballot.
But they can't trust that you're going to do it. You got to bring a blank ballot back out, and you got it, which means you had to hand your ballot in.
Because then they could repunch another one.
Right. So that they would already they would have punched it in. Now they got a fresh ballot. They punch that in. They hand that to the next guy who has to come out with a fresh ballot.
It's also before the prevalence of a lot of surveillance cameras because I don't that really wouldn't have worked if you kind of had one outside.
Yeah, how long ago
are
we talking here, Ro?
Yeah, you talking 70s?
No, no. We're well into the 2000s when this was going on.
Oh, wow.
That's why the before the placemat. Oh, yeah.
So this is why
the placemat ballot is the reason that you have this now.
It's huge.
Now, you can still do this with a placemat ballot. This is still doable, but you got to just wear bigger clothes.
<Still doable. laughs>
Why do we get the placemats for this one, but for, like, the governor?
That was a placemat.
That was huge, yeah.
That was pretty big.
Yeah. I did mine on an electronic one.
Now, see, electronics screwed up this whole gambit here. Now they got to trust you. They got to give you the $5
to
trust
you. Screw with our operation here.
They're used to, I had a longtime Chicago politician tell me once. He goes, listen, if you're in a business in which you need a $5 bill for anything, make sure you do not do it in the week before Election Day. Because you go to the banks, you cannot find $5 bills.
Wow. Oh, gee. It was that bad.
Because guys, you know, in their union, you know, imagine your number show up, and they would go to their local bank or currency exchange with hundreds of dollars and go, I need this in fives.
I need $500 in fives, right. Please.
Exactly right.
Wow.
That's how it goes. And then you know, and everything would be done in multiples of five. Right? Like in one neighborhood it would be five, then it would be 10, 15.
Why would you do it for $5 in the 2000s? Like $5.
Because you're getting something for it.
What do you mean? You're getting $5?
You're getting $5.
An extra five if
bucks.
You refer your buddy down the street?
Yeah, here's $5.
Here's another one for you.
Maybe it's 10. Maybe, hey, I need 10. All right, fine, here's 10.
In $5 bills.
Right. All in $5 bills.
Yeah. This one feels like we've been saying is going to be so close. The mayor's race in particular, with 14 candidates. And you've got those mail-in ballots, which 30,000 of them are still outstanding.
Right,
so
correct.
If you think about the
some
top two
lost.
Finishers, some of them may, we don't know where they are, right? I mean, where are they?
Do we open them and see who they voted for?
And how do you postmark them as of today? I don't know. Figure it out.
But do you think it was so low because people basically, everyone has assumed now for weeks that there will be a runoff and they can go vote in April as well?
But then it would be two out of the 14.
I mean,
it's not
the proper thinking. That shouldn't be the way people are thinking.
I don't think people want to know enough about it. I think to the average person out there is just kind of watching this. Doesn't, you know, they got a job, they got a life, they got kids, they got a dog, they got whatever
lives.
It is. They got to figure out what it is they got to go do.
Well, and it's overwhelming. It's too
it
hard
is.
To study
it's too
14
many.
People.
It's way too many. And
it
this
is.
Was a total mistake that we allow these people into these races.
Why
I sound exactly like a guy from the South in the 1930s when I said that, but what I meant was that it's there ought to be
go
more
democracy.
Of a, there ought to be more of a vetting process. Well, the problem with democracy, it like this, is that this is the everybody gets a trophy democracy. You know, when George Dunn used to run the Democratic Party of the County of Cook, they didn't hang. We didn't. Nobody was playing these kinds of games.
Yeah, but we're so accustomed to the guys everybody sends being on the ballot and nobody
right?
else. And this is a departure from that. There are true people who haven't run for elective office before. There are
you know,
true progressives. There are people who don't seem to be connected to any political establishment. And if that's what you're looking for, that's there. Mm-hmm. Where we haven't always seen that before.
And to what end, I might add?
To what end? They may be the attractive candidate that may be best for our city,
depending
on your viewpoints.
Does that make the Logan Square bike riding in the middle of a snowstorm hipster happy that they get to vote for somebody who's not going to win?
No, I think that you might believe that they are the right candidate for your views and leading the city, and that it doesn't you don't have to go through some establishment process in order to be anointed in order to make it. That in the past, there you know how the system's set up.
So
or why
Bill
you're pushing
Daley
back.
Tony...
You got to get 25,000 signatures for this race. I mean, mm-hmm. the whole thing is set up so that you can't really meet those milestones unless you have major support of the political establishment.
Right. And when Tony Preckwinkel and Bill Daley are your candidates tomorrow, how well did that work?
I don't know. I mean, that's who the voters wanted because they had choice. So then that shows that that's who they picked.
But if you didn't come and vote,
then you can't complain.
That's true. But the point is, when if at the end of this, if it's 35% of the vote went to the top two, which is like the guess of where it's going to be, that means that 65% didn't want either of those people, right? So it's a question of when you have too many people on the ballot. Some of those people are there just to knock other people off the ballot, just to depress their
Which
I mean this
is
this,
another tactic.
This idea that democracy is really at play here, as again the same politician said to me, not even fishing is on the square. in Chicago, which tells you everything that you need to know about that. That there's no that that the system always finds a way to impact the outcome. And the,
oh, is that right? Is that what you're voting for? Like you want you want that to happen?
No, I'm no, absolutely not. But I'm telling you, that's what is happening. And the only way to get around that is to have reform people come up through the system and reform the system within. Because to find civilians just coming out the street, there hasn't been a mayor of the city that was not in politics. Right. And so people who are coming up as community organizers or, you know, outside lawyers or whatever it is, very hard to break in. Very hard to break in. And you still have to have an organization. You have to have people on the street. You got to have, now that guy may not have $5 in his pocket to hand you anymore, but those people are still the ones who are going out and the legitimate ways of doing it where they come pick you up in a van and make sure that you, you know, an entire building gets taken over to a, to a polling place. Right. Or a church. Yeah, everybody meets and parks in a church parking lot and then they drive you all over.
Right.
Make sure everybody gets it.
It's those, organization.
Those kinds of organizations are still very, very, very big.
Yep.
And I just
and they work.
And that's how people get elected. So you gotta find a we gotta have a message that also makes it and I'm not saying this is good. I'm just saying this is the way it is. Because this city, that expression that has become so famous, nobody wants, nobody sent, is true. They don't want change in City Hall because a lot of people are going to lose their jobs. And so when Amara Enya becomes mayor, she's going to fire all the people who are there and put her own people in the jobs because there's a lot of jobs that don't make any sense over there.
You might start looking around.
So, right.
If you some jobs that you don't have to do a whole lot for.
Right. Now, they put up walls. It used to be you could walk by an office in City Hall and you'd see the doors, glass doors, and you'd look back there. And as far as the eye could see, it was desks. With one phone on it and people sitting at the desk, not on that phone, not with computers or anything else like that. And just forever and ever and ever, as far as the eye can see, it was like the last scene from Raiders of the Lost Ark, like the warehouse scene of just people sitting around.
Then you look at the payroll.
Right.
Like, wait a minute.
And then, what do these people do? They didn't really do it. They're filing. What do they do? They're doing nothing. They're collecting a paycheck. Now they put walls up in all those offices. You get behind that wall, it's still the same situation.
Oh, that's great.
I gotta. I know. That's, I'm not
just
saying,
vote. You got half an hour.
Go out and vote. So vote for whoever you want to vote for. You want to just whatever it is. You got 14 choices. It's like an ice cream store. Over
Why
there.
Didn't we go out this morning and find somebody that knows none of these choices? That would have been a great thing for us to do.
I think a lot of those people stayed home.
That includes me. I don't know any of these people. All right, let's check in with Kim. What's coming up at the bottom of the hour in the news?
As we've been talking about, lots of candidates on the ballot, but not a lot of interest.
And in WGN traffic up in Park City, a crash Route 41 northbound at Washington Street, one down in Alsip at 111th and Cicero, and Metro Rock Island train number 413. Scheduled to be in Joliet at 5:58. Well, that still isn't there yet due to a mechanical emergency near the new Lenox station. For personalized traffic on demand, get the Traffic Chicago app approved by the mortgage experts of Team Hochberg. Just search TRAFFIX Chicago. I'm Jen DeSalvo in WGN Traffic Central.
You got 17 minutes to go out and vote. Just go out and do it. If you get in line, they'll let you vote.
That's right. If you're in line by 7 o'clock, they cannot turn you away.
Low turnout in an election that should have high turnout. It's the most consequential mayoral election maybe of our lifetimes because you've got a there's no incumbent.
Right.
Right? Very rarely do you get that.
And a lot of choices, which may be part of the problem. I don't know. Might be what's keeping people away.
Mayoral expert John Fritchie joins us. He has been with us through this entire thing. We'll be with us for another 5 weeks afterwards, because my God, this thing doesn't end tonight now, does it? Can you explain the low turnout? What do you think is at play here?
Well, I'm busy feverishly filling out ballots, trying to get that number up right now.
You know, a man like you shouldn't joke about things like that. Yeah. All right. So what do you think is really behind it?
Well, you know what? It's tough to figure out the apathy level. I don't know if people have thrown up their hands. You know, this is one of the most frustrating things you can see. You know, we really do have, you know, a candidate somewhere in that field that should appeal to everybody. And the fact that people are sitting home, not just on the mayoral, but in those wards where you have very contested aldermanic races, you're still seeing very low turnouts on some of these lakefront wards and north side wards as well. Now, what you really want to read into that in the bigger picture is, who does that benefit? Well, that benefits the candidates who had a good early mail program or early vote program, a good vote by mail program, because they're going to be able to get their people out there before today.
you know, not worry about the weather, not worry about that. If you had to guess, or if I had to guess who those candidates would be, Jerry Joyce, when you looked at the numbers that came out of the 19th Ward on the southwest side and 41st Ward on the northwest side, those are going to be a lot of Joyce voters, some McCarthy voters. Preckwinkle, through her position as chairman of the Cook County Democratic Party, they're going to have the data they need to get a good vote-by-mail program out there as well. John Daly, because of the resources that he had to put into the Bill Daly. There's too many
Daly. There are a lot of Daly's.
Bill Daly had the resources that he would be able to target and get a lot of people out there to vote early as well. So I think those folks are going to benefit. The people that hurt, I've maintained from the beginning that, you know, a lot of Amara Enya voters may just have sat this out if they didn't think that she was in the mix. Lori Lightfoot, who had a good couple of weeks, and you thought they might be enough to drive people to the polls today, you're not seeing that. So I think this definitely is going to have an effect on things. Preckwinkle may be a beneficiary here. Lightfoot may be a victim here. But as you know, and you know, Anna and Ro, we've talked about this a number of times, it's almost like mayoral whack-a-mole, that you change any one variable here, and you know, there's a rippling effect that affects a number of other things.
You saw this surge also, John, though, in the November elections, of people signing up to vote for the first time. You saw younger voters coming out voting, much older voting blocks, which is uncharacteristic. And this time around, it sort of went back to a lot of older people voted, and you really didn't see that range.
Well, you're seeing the traditional demographics now, right? You're seeing the highest numbers between 55 and 64, followed by 65 and up. The millennial numbers are about where they used to be. I think you can attribute that in part to you don't have the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez type of candidate that's getting the millennials fired up to get out of the coffee shop, to get to the polling place. Those are folks that tend not to vote early, that tend not to do vote by mail. And if they're not inspired on that day, and guys, you know, look out the window, you know, weather definitely was not an excuse.
No. Well, you know what is? Let me just tell you what happened. I can tell you what happened. I don't need a bunch of looky loos telling me what happened. It's very obvious. This is the point I was trying to make inarticulately, you know what I mean, earlier, which is there's just too many. There's just too many. At 14, there isn't a real battle here. They're all kind of battling an amorphous the pack. And what voters connect with, it's because there's entertainment in this. This is a television sport. This is to some degree, a radio sport. People want to hear the conflict. They want to experience the conflict. And when you have one-on-one or two, you know, three, four people in a race, then you get to start to see a storyline develop. And you want to see the combat. You don't have it when it's 14 and people lost interest.
Well, I think they can cut both ways. You can say, okay, there's too much, and you know, it's overwhelming choice for folks. Or the flip side is, when you see two or three candidates, people say, well, you know what, there's not enough people to choose from. So, you know, trying to pin it on that, I understand where you're going. I think that's better, because you see less tribalism when you have a big field like this. You know, I think when it gets down to two candidates, as it will sometime by the time the votes are certified over the next couple of weeks, then you're going to see people break out. Keep in mind, you know, the votes won't be certified until March 12th. And at that point, candidates can look to see if they want to challenge. Are they within the 5% margin of error?
Within 5%, that could be a ton of them.
Yeah.
Right?
You know, well, but let's
5 or 6?
No, 5% of the margin of error.
I know, but there could be 5 or 6 candidates potentially within 5% of the winner. Isn't that possible?
Well, that's just
if you look at the polls.
You have to be within 5% of the second place finisher, and you could have two or three candidates that are in that go around. I mean, we can have potentially legal challenges that go, you know, well into the runoff period. In a sense, of uncertainty. So, you know, we'll have to see how that plays out. But again, this low turnout, that may change that dynamic. Yep. Because you may have a couple of the candidates who are, you know, have a real leg up in that aspect of the election.
There are 20,
and maybe that gives them enough to settle it tonight.
There are 20,000 votes outstanding now by mail, according to
Board of Elections.
The Board of Elections.
And Ro, you hit it on the head, because when the turnout is as low as it is today,
you know, the marginal or relative weight of those absentee ballots or the votes that are still out goes up because they're inherently going to create a bigger proportion of the overall vote than they normally would. So they, you know, there's going to be a lot of daily checking of the results as these ballots are coming in. And, you know, I think it's going to be some uncertain times ahead, but it will be interesting. And then we are going to see a market change, though. Once we know who those final two are, you know, you are going to see some breakouts, not necessarily on ideals and proposals, but could be gender-based, could be race-based, a number of those things. And that's why I like the idea of having a broader spectrum right now. But at the end of the day, whether we finish at around 30-34% for turnout once all the outstanding ballots are in, you know, in my mind, that's really no excuse for having those kind of numbers. That's about, you know, keep in mind that about half the folks are registered to vote. So you're talking about one out of every six or one out of every seven Chicagoans who are actually bothering to cast a vote in what you appropriately said is arguably the most important mayoral election, you know, of our lifetime.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll pick this up tomorrow, John. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
I have a hunch we're going to see a lot of each other.
Yeah. And this thing may not be over until the midnight on the 11th.
Or the next election. It's only 4 years.
Oh, geez. Don't say that.
Thank you, John.
Thanks.
Take care.
All right. Let's check in now with Andrea. What's coming up at the top of the hour, as though I should be asking you this?
Well, the polls will be closing, and we'll begin our election night coverage, Ro.
And in WGN traffic, it was supposed to end at 6 p.m., but road construction still blocks the right lane of I-80 westbound just before Richard Street due to emergency bridge deck repairs. So we're seeing delays of up to 20 minutes, and that stretches all the way to 355. You're hitting the brakes before you pass 355. For personalized traffic on demand, get the Traffic Chicago app approved by the mortgage experts of Team Hochberg. Just search TRAFFIX Chicago. I'm Jen DeSalvo in WGN Traffic Central.
All right, coming up, Andre Darlis in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. She'll get you ready for election night coverage. You know, we just played that commercial with Jerry Joyce, and mm-hmm. I will say this, that is a name in my my prognostications, I've not mentioned him very much, and I think he's going to be there at the end tonight, too. He's going to be in that top four or five top people, and, you know, Lori Lightfoot, I think, is going to be in that as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, you saw that in this recent poll over the weekend, that the two of them saw the biggest surge against the people who had already been at the top, the Preckwinkle,
right.
Daly, and Susana Mendoza.
And Jerry Joyce is from Beverly, Mount Greenwood area, and that ward is showing big numbers.
They tend to organize well.
Yeah. And they got neighbors who go, hey, they go next door. They go, did you vote?
Mary Pat.
Yeah.
Mary Kate. You could always tell by every
Mary
sign.
Jo.
Every right. sign in the front lawn, too.
Timmy,
right.
Timmy.
Every lawn.
Timmy, did you go out and vote today?
All right, get Mikey.
Tommy. Mike.
Guys. Where is everybody?
Oh, you
guys are pretty good. That's pretty spot
yeah, I know
on.
You're the South Sider really more than we are. We're the North Siders.
You guys are doing really
imitating.
Well, though.
Yeah.
Doing never. Good. This is my mom.
Doing okay?
Say, you're doing good.
Is Mary going to do this or not? Which Mary? Mary Pat! Where's Mary Pat?
Where's Mary Pat at?
Wait, hold on. All my Mary Pat friends are texting now.
Yeah. All right.
It's fun.
All right. It's all is what it is. Anyway, so I think that's good news for Jerry Joyce.
I do too. Right. You know, in apparently in the mail-in ballots too, he's done well according to what they. The
how do we know that?
Just where they're coming from.
Oh,
where they're coming from.
They come in from Beverly because people get it. Hey, I did. All right, listen. Don't get all mad at me. I didn't vote at the polling place. I mailed it in. Oh,
by
man.
The way, when I was at St. John Fisher School before you got to the pancake breakfast, everyone's going, "Where's Ro?"
And I'm big in Beverly now.
Where's Ro at?
Very big. Very big in Beverly. But you know, it's a funny thing that it is it's like its own, it's a bellwether for Chicago. It's totally mm-hmm. its own world down there.
It is.
It's pretty great. All right. Can we just talk about shaving mm-hmm. for a second here? Because I feel like I need to shave again. I'm going to be up for the next 4 days. And if you want a close shave, the only way to do this, I believe, is with my friends from Harry's. You get a, listen to this. I got a deal for you. You get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and travel cover for $3 plus free shipping by using my name. I want you to just think about this. Think about how much, like you go to the store right now, you go over by Walgreens or by the Jewels or wherever, you're going to go buy razors. You have to press a button, then people have to show up, an armed security guard. Sometimes you get frisked on your way in or your way out. Just go online. Go to harrys.com, and then at the exit, you're done with your transaction, use my name in the promo code box, Roe, R-O-E. There's a very special deal for you right now where just put my name in the promo code box. Immediately takes you right to the deal. Once again, listen to this. New customers get the trial set from me and from Harry. You get a razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and travel cover for $3 plus free shipping and handling. It'll change the way you shave. Harrys.com. Use the promo code ROE, R-O-E. E.